Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, January 3rd, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org, questions plural. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we had left off a couple of weeks ago in the Gospel of Luke. We're in chapter 16. Yep, chapter 16, read by Alexander Scorby. So, Gospel of Luke.
Chapter 16. And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward, and the same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him, and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his lord's debtors unto him, and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and sit down quickly, and write 50. Then said he to another, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill, and write 80. And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if ye have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. And the Pharisees also, who were covetous, heard all these things, and they derided him. And he said unto them, ye are they which justify yourselves before men, but God knoweth your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time the kingdom of God is preached, and every man presseth into it. And it is easier for heaven and earth to pass than one tittle of the law to fail. Whosoever putteth away his wife, and marrieth another, committeth adultery. And whosoever marrieth her that is put away from her husband, committeth adultery. There was a certain rich man, which was clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate, full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died, and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died, and was buried. And in hell he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and seeth Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus, that he may dip the tip of his finger in water, and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime receivedst thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And beside all this, between us and you, there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. Then he said, I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come into this place of torment. Abraham saith unto him, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto him, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead.
Okay, let me just bring this off my desk here. Okay, tonight we don't have a particular subject. We're going to go pretty quickly into an open forum, but first we'll see if there are any questions. Well, a few things first before we do that. Let me make a couple announcements myself. Still working on the foundation course. That may take quite some time now. I'm going to try to talk with the couple of people that put that together, and maybe we can kind of simplify it and maybe even add to it at a later time. But it's going to take a little while. The other course, which is the jury administrator course, that's ready to go up as soon as I make contact with our technician and he walks me through the process to put that course up. I'll put it up. Hopefully we'll get it done this week. So those, you know, we'll see what we do on the foundation course. We'll try to get something up soon. Let's see. I think I mentioned this last week, as everybody should know by now. We have been sending some emails out on different things. We had a lot of problems with our website not long ago. But our front page is totally redone a couple of weeks ago. Well, actually a week or so ago we finished up. Still a couple of pages on the website we're still working on that have to be brought back up or repaired. Not that much. We're very close to being completed at this point, I believe. The two major tabs that is most important is the Educational Start Here tab and Start a Committee of Safety Here. This is the only way we're going to save America. There is absolutely zero ways, and I challenge anyone to bring another way to us. And if we can find something to add, we'll add. But if people refuse to get educated, forget about it. America's lost forever. Thomas Jefferson was clear, the founder of this nation, the founder of this government was Thomas Jefferson, and he was very clear about the fact that if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And of course that makes sense. How could we be ignorant and expect our government to obey the Constitution if we ourselves don't know it? How can we be ignorant and expect our government to obey the common law, the law of the land, if we don't know it? Of course, it's an impossibility. And that's the problem. That's why we are where we are. That's why people think we're a democracy and not a republic. And those who know that we're a republic don't even understand that we're a very special republic. We're a common law republic. There are hundreds of republics in this world, hundreds of them, or at least 100 anyway. I don't know if it's pluralized, but there's quite a few republics in this world. China's a republic, Russia's a republic, Iran's a republic, Iraq's a republic, and many, many, many other nations are republics. But they're not the kind of a republic that we are. We are a natural law republic, the only natural law republic in the entire world. There is none other. And only once before was there one other, and that's in 1600 B.C. Of course, Britain came very close, but they never really came to a full completion of really with the common law. They were robbed many years before they really had the opportunity to really work out their system. But again, they did have the common law, and we did inherit the common law from them. Our founding fathers, the Pilgrims, brought the common law with them to America. And our founding fathers lived under the common law and were ruled and judged by the common law. And that's why Britain had such a great deal of a problem with America trying to really take control because of the common law. The other thing, of course, being educated is actually doing something. If the people aren't going to step up and do something, you can't have liberty. Liberty is not free. It costs. It cost our founding fathers blood, their lives, and their possessions. And many people over the years have paid with blood to keep this liberty. But it's almost all gone. And even though we may be close to having things returned to us, if the people don't step up, you can't have liberty. If you don't understand it and you can't apply it and see if the people who are our servants are not obeying it, if we can't see whether they're obeying it or not, you can't have liberty. And we have to have government by consent. That is the key. If the people are not watching like a hawk at all times, we can't have liberty. We're going to lose it. So we must have government by consent. And that is starting a committee of safety. Now, I just updated the Committee of Safety handbook. Not the Committee of Safety, I'm sorry, handbook. Let me open to the page. The County Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook. Okay, which is part of the Committee of Safety, but a very special book was put aside because there's very specifics for that particular group of people who are going to be on the political committee. Okay, there are different committees, of course. But I just updated that handbook. I updated it, I think it was Saturday, New Year's Eve, or New Year's Day, shall I say. But then I updated it again today, or I think it was early today, or maybe late last night, I don't remember, because there was still a few problems with it, a few things, and I reorganized the book. And I added a couple of things into it, and I think it flows a lot better, and it's a lot clearer. If anybody has any questions on the committeeman and how this process works, or the Committee of Safety, you know, those are the things we should try to discuss today. So if anybody has those questions, hopefully people will get into the queue and ask those questions. We did meet last Tuesday at 7:15 Eastern Standard Time in this room for 1 hour, and we did talk. Unfortunately, I didn't record. I wasn't thinking on recording it, but I think I'll record it because we had some good questions and hopefully we had some good answers, and it would have been nice to have that recorded and have them posted. So we're going to record them. And I guess we'll post whatever we have. The Tuesday night meeting only goes for 1 hour, and the only subject matter we discuss there is the Committee of Safety. People who have questions about the Committee of Safety, the books that were written, detailed information, things that they think are missing or they don't understand or they're looking for, and how the committeeman handbook works hand in hand with the Committee of Safety handbook. The Committee of Safety handbook talks about the entire structure and how to create a Committee of Safety. And the committeeman handbook, which is part of the Committee of Safety, of course, it's a subcommittee, and it's also called the political committee. And they're responsible for the committeeman work and getting things together. But all the people in the whole committee are responsible during the election time to walk the papers, to get the necessary signatures in order to get the people onto the ballots. I also posted, I think it was this week, I don't think it was last week, and I don't think I mentioned it, but if I did, then I guess I'll repeat myself. Pretty sure I did it this week. I posted up a paper on the designating petition, which is a non-party designating petition. Anybody that is a non-party person, doesn't belong to a party, can walk those papers for anybody. You can walk them for Republicans, you can walk them for Democrats, you can walk them for any other party, and you can walk them for those who are claiming they don't belong to a party. And so there's a lot of value in that. You know, if you're a Republican, you can only involve yourself with the workings of the Republican. The party bosses have a tight control over you. You can't walk anyone's petitions without their approval. You'll be all by yourself if you try, and they'll probably throw you out if you do. But you definitely can't walk a Democrat's petitions if you think that there's a particular person running in a different party that would be a better person for as a statesman you can't walk those papers. You can only participate with their process, and you can't go outside of it. Well, we're free from that. It is true we cannot vote in the primaries, as far as with the when I say vote, let me take out. I might put that for the Republican primary. Let's put it that way. You can't vote for the Republican primary, but you can vote, of course, and get involved with the primary process. You know, for non-party or anyone that you have walked petitions for. And if you walk the petition for a Republican, then they'll be on two ballots. They'll be on the Republican ticket, maybe, and they'll be on the no-party ticket. There's a few things we have to work out on that, but we do have all the paperwork together. The petitions are there. On the petition, I think it's four pages of information beyond the petition itself. So the first page is the petition, and the pages after is just information, instructions, and the law. And we'll get into greater detail of that when that time comes, which for some states I think it's coming up soon. But in order to really, there's two ways. If you want to walk a petition for someone outside of your party and you're in a party, you would need to become a notary, and once you have your notary seal and everything, then you can walk papers for anybody and seal the papers. That's one way. Of course, if you are in no party, you can walk papers for anyone that is willing to go on to the no party label, where there is no political party. Because the end result is getting rid of the political parties. Well, we have found out when we were committeemen that they had a high attrition rate, a very high attrition rate. They were always looking for people, constantly looking for people. They were looking for suckers, really, you know. And once the people that would go and join the party and get involved and started to realize that they're being snookered here, they eventually leave. So they have a high attrition rate. The people that stay are the party bosses and all the people that are getting all the payoffs. And many that may stay is for camaraderie and maybe a morsel for something here or there. Most of which is really criminal, by the way. Most of these favors are criminal. Of course, political favors aren't necessarily criminal, you know, offering to support someone here or there. If you do this and help me here, I'll help you, you know, that kind of thing, whatever, to get into this position or that position. But there's a lot more that goes on. There's payola going on. There's money to be made here. There's contracts to be gotten. And that's where the criminality comes in, because that the fix is in, and that's a crime. I'm going to leave the Republican Party for the sole purpose of doing what I have to do in my county and to participate with the no party. But the idea of them, you know, there are two ways we can get rid of parties, and I got a little bit into this in the handbook. You can read about it, and I might look into it maybe next week. Maybe we'll read through it and talk about it. But generally speaking, the high attrition rate is key. And when the information flows over to the other side, what we're doing on the county level, and we become 100, 200 strong, then we'll be as strong as they are. We'll just have as much clout as they've got. And more. A lot of those people will drift over to us. And the attrition rate, I think, at some point will be so great that they're just not going to be able to survive. But there is another way to get rid of these parties, and that's through the courts, because the whole process is unlawful. It's subversion of the system, and it's robbing the people of their right of due process, and that's what we would take them to court for. And if we have to do that, we will do that. But I don't think we're going to have to do that. I think as the counties build up membership, and you get 100-plus members in each of these counties, and they start getting involved in these things, I think that in itself is just going to waste away and fall away. We also wouldn't, and once we become that powerful enough, the people who are running for office will come over to our side. And remember, we could take anyone out of office that we want. Anybody that is not upholding their oath, of not holding, staying within their jurisdictions, if they're not doing that, then we can remove them. We can do recall. I started looking into the paperwork for recall. I think I put something up already Let me take a quick look. Or maybe at least I'm working on it. Yeah, I didn't put it up yet. You can get the, here's the independent designating petition, for instance. This is what it looks like. Okay, and it's a very simple thing. And there's a lot of information, talks about law. Now, I use New York law in this. You can use your own state's law if necessary, but you don't even have to worry about that. You could just take this information. You can take New York state law with it. And because especially if they don't have law in their state, well, that's fine. The New York law will work for it because we have a right to due process, and we can rest upon Article 4, Section 1, which is called the full faith and credit, which is given to every state, to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. So we can rest upon that to leverage New York in, number one. Number two, it's incumbent upon them to supply this petition for those people who are not in parties. There's a lot of people who have registered and didn't choose a party. And again, I'm going this month probably. I'm going to go down to the Board of Election and remove myself, and I'll get this petition going in. If one person does it in the state, then that Board of Election is required to notify the state Board of Election, you know, the main Board of Election, and that Board of Election is to distribute these petitions and make them available for everyone in every county throughout the state. So only one person has to really do this per state to get it into the system, and then come back and double-check to make sure it's available, that it's available, because it's the law that these petitions are available to anyone in the state. Thereby, you know, you can always pull the petitions off of our website, of course, and work off of that. But they may want to adjust them a little bit, and that's fine, because it is their job to do it. This was created very specifically by the election law, the very specifics of what they want. It looks very much like other petitions. It's just got a little bit different wording. And there is two different petitions on the independent nominating petition, one for anybody running for public office in pretty much anywhere with the exception of villages and towns. Okay, villages and towns has a different kind of independent nominating petition. We do have a copy of that up on our website also. And the only difference really is a little bit on the wording and the way that the names of the candidates is laid out. And, you know, there's no district number and ward number. It just goes straight to the town. Maybe someone running for mayor or someone running as a councilman or something of that nature. So hopefully we'll be doing a lot of talking about this as time goes on, and people within their counties, there'll be someone in the political committee that'll master all this stuff and be able to explain and express everyone and help everybody with their paperwork. But it's going to take everyone to walk paperwork to get people into office. That's how you get people on the ballot. That's how these party bosses do it. They have all these slaves working for them, going out, getting signatures, and telling them how much they, you know, oh, you're elected. Yeah, they're not elected. We haven't found anyone elected yet anywhere in the United States, with the exception of a few of us that have found the process to become elected, because they pulled that out a long time ago. But being elected only really puts us right back underneath their thumb. It statutorizes the whole system, and it puts our government by consent underneath their wing, you know, because they have their party bosses who control everything. It just goes back to the same old business. We got to get rid of party bosses. But anyway, this is the way to do it. So these petitions are available, and everyone needs to walk them. You know, you have the political committee working throughout the year, keeping an eye on things, getting information, finding out who's running for office, and then setting up the interviews to see if we're going to walk their paperwork, making sure that they are constitutionalists, make sure they take our course here on National Liberty Alliance, and we're going to support them at that point and get them onto the ballot. They got to promise that they're going to be a statesman, that they're going to obey the Constitution, and we will let them know that if you break your word, we will recall you as quick as we get you in. We will take you out. And if you commit a criminal act, we will bring it to the grand jury for an indictment. So we'll remove you through an indictment and opposed to being removed through a recall if that's what's necessary. We have to be strict with these people. When the government fears the people, that's when we'll have liberty. And as long as the people feel the government, then, of course, we have tyranny. So, but everybody needs to walk the petitions. If everybody walks the petitions, if you have 200 people in your county committee, and that should be a slam dunk, real easy to get once the word gets out into your area and people start to bring presentations and lead the people, because people are looking, they're hungry for something. We just have to share it with them. So once people get into the system, you get about 100 to 200 people. You get 100 people, you're going to really do okay. 200 people, forget about it. You're going to go through the roof. Anything more than that, you're only going to have to go out and get 3 or 4 signatures. It's no big deal. Go out for an hour or two and you're done with the signatures. You'll carry maybe 4 or 5 different petitions for different individuals that we will be supporting, and you'd get the signatures from the same people. The nice thing about it is that when you go out, if you're a Republican and you go out on a Republican line to walk petitions, you have to go to Republicans to get them nominated. If you walk in a non-party petition, as long as they're registered, okay, if they're a registered voter, they can sign it. So a Republican can sign it, a Democrat can sign it, a non-party person can sign, anyone can sign it. Okay, within the district, the political subdivision where the election is taking place for whatever position is being filled. So, that does make the job a lot easier, a lot quicker. So if you've got 5 or 6 petitions that you're walking and you're knocking a door, you can get them to sign all 5 or 6 petitions. You do that to 3, 4, 5 doors and you're done. Okay, everybody else is out doing the same thing, and that's how you get enough petitions in order to get people into the program, onto the ballot. We do have some information on this, on the numbers, on how many is necessary signatures, what signatures are necessary in order to get someone elected, get them onto the ballot, and that's filled in down here. For instance, any office to be filled by all voters of any municipal court district, they required 3,000 signatures. So you got to get 3,000 signatures, and that takes a lot of people to get 3,000 signatures. I mean, one person, 2 people, 3 people, 4 people, you're going to be walking forever to get that many signatures. But if you have 200 people in this county and maybe a couple hundred people in that county, and it falls all within the municipality, the municipal court district, you will have plenty of people to go out to get the necessary signatures. So if we have 1,000 people, collectively, then we need 3,000 signatures. It's 3 signatures apiece. We'd say get 4, get that extra one. Because the key thing with this, and remember, the early bird catches the worm, and these people, we are motivated. If we're involved in this, we're motivated people. Those people are not. They're dragging their rear ends and they're involved, but they're not really highly motivated. Highly motivated means we should get out early. Because if we get out early, we get the signature. This is something that's very important to understand. If you get a signature of someone on the designating petition, and let's say it's a Republican, and someone else in the Republican Party walked the district and went to that door and got there a day or two or a week before you, okay, your signature is no longer valid, and their signature is. The first person to get the signature is the person who gets the valid signature. So it's important note to know, and that's why everyone should get an extra one, because then we'd have quite a bit in case they chisel it out. But I don't think they'll be paying attention or watching to chisel it out. Usually that's party bickering from within. One person wants the seat, the other person walked, you got 2 people running for the same seat, let's say, as a elected committee man, quote unquote. Of course, there is none, but they think they are. Only one person can fill that seat, and so they'll fight for it, and they'll look at each other's petitions coming in. I got to this person before you, this so and so forth. So they'll make that argument, and that's how they'll do it, to try to kick the other person out. And it's ridiculous. With us, we can have 1,000 people. There is no limit to the number of people that want to participate. The more, the merrier. The easier the job, of course. And this really makes it open for everyone. That's why there's no need for an election. You want to participate, you're in. As Thomas Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. It's the people that are on the front lines that are doing the committee man work, and getting these statesmen onto the ballots, statesmen onto the ballot, and bringing out the information into their election district concerning these people and why they should vote for them. And it should never be a political thing in the sense of politics. I mean, everything's a political thing in a political process, but it shouldn't be politicking. You know, it should be the fact that, not that this person stands for this or stands for that. No, this person is a statesman. This person knows the Constitution. This person gave us his word that he would adhere to the Constitution and honor his oath. And we did let him know if he breaks that, we're taking him out as quick as we can get him in. And so that should bring a lot of weight to the people in the community to vote for individuals that really are there to do something right and not to break the law, not to go beyond their jurisdictions and whatever authorities they may have. but anyway, okay, let me move away from the subject. So I think next week we may look at the handbook or something. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I wanted to do something this week. Matter of fact, I wanted to look at the handbook this week. It's, you know, portions of it. But I just didn't have the time to put that together. I'm involved in so many other things that were going on, especially with the website and updating that book. So, okay, let me think if there's anything else before we look for questions from Jan. I guess that's all I got right now. Jan, do we have any questions? Or?
We have about four or five tonight, John.
Okay.
The first one is, I am starting to hear about NASARA again, and it seems to bring a lot of controversy with it. What is NLA's take on it? Is it real and authentic, or is it a big dose of hopium, as they like to say these days?
Yeah, the Lasaria thing, that, I believe that's the thing where it really lays out the Congress was forced to sign some papers to, which really brings us into a jubilee and shuts down a lot of un-American or unauthorized or unlawful, you know, things in the government. Is that what we're talking about, I believe?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did look into that. I could find nothing anywhere. So if it's true, I have no clue. I've looked, I've searched, I've spent enough of my time looking. If anybody else can find anything to prove that it is a paper, it's supposed to be secret and all that other stuff, but that doesn't mean anything to us if we can't see it and know that it's valid. so what play it'll have, I don't know. But there is only one just way for things to turn when we get to the other side, only one just way, and that is to go through the Jubilee process. And that's what that paper brings forward, is the Jubilee process. Anybody that's not familiar with the Jubilee process, it comes from the Bible. It's a biblical principle where, you know, every man is forgiven all their debts and they return back to their own home and so on and so forth. Which is really a picture of salvation. That's what that's all about. But it is also a real thing. I'm not aware of a Jubilee ever being applied anywhere in history. I'm not saying that it hasn't been, but it could have been. I'm just not aware of it, and I have no idea whether it has or not. But the potential of it happening here in America makes all the sense in the world. I don't see any other way to get around it, because if you take, for instance, the fact that these evil people, the powers that be, which is like a couple of hundred families, and a lot of major corporations, which they own, these major corporations and the Federal Reserve and all the gold they've got and the silver and all the precious metals and the properties and the islands. And I mean, it just goes on and on and on, all the things that they own. Well, when you catch a criminal, as Trump says, you don't let them keep the stuff. You take it back away from them. So if it takes it back away from them, where's it going to go? To government? What's government going to do? That would not be just. That's not righteous. We don't want to make government rich. We just need to give government just enough money to do what needs to be done and nothing more. And legal taxes, lawful taxes, are sufficient to supply that need. So where is all these goods going to go? Well, we've been robbed. We've all been robbed. We've been at war. There are many of us are casualties of war. I consider myself to some degree a casualty of war. I've been battling the IRS for 20 years. over 20 years, as a matter of fact. And to some degree, I feel I'm a casualty of war. I've won in some effects, in ways, but, you know, they still hammer down on you, constantly giving you a hard time, constantly trying to fear, put fear into you, and so on. And that's pain and suffering. Some people have gone to jail, debtor's prison. Okay, that's unlawful, but they've gone to debtor's prison. So, again, we the people, you know, we've been injured. For every injury, there must be a remedy. And the common law process of this whole thing is restitution. The people need to be restored. So all of those money, all of those monies, all of those properties has to turned into liquid, I guess, you know, into liquidity, and passed to the people. I can see for sure, you know, I have this envision to see this. I mean, again, there's no other just way. Mortgages, all mortgages forgiven. Credit cards, forgiven. Utility bills, forgiven. Everything, forgiven. And also restitution is something that would be liquidity given to the people, however that would be worked out. Now, it wouldn't be just America. It would be worldwide because the people of the world have suffered. They've been not only robbing from us, they've been robbing from everyone. So, you know, this is a process that's a worldwide thing. So I can see the logic. I can see the probability of us going down that road that paper puts out. I don't know whether the paper is real or not, but I do believe that that's the way it's going to go at the end of the day. And if it doesn't, then we the people who are taking back our government, remember, government by consent through committees of safety, we the people will make sure it happens that way. It's that simple. People need to get involved. If the people expect to be ignorant and free, if you expect to be compensated, restored, okay, it's not going to happen if we continue in our ignorance and we don't step up and do something. And we don't have to put our lives on the line. We don't have to put blood out there. We just have to put our time and a few of our dollars right now just to get things going and get things happening and take back this nation, take back the republic. So anyway, that's what I see, and that's what I think. Next question.
Okay. Pursuant to Rule 45, a subpoena served states must be served upon someone within 100 miles. That raises three questions. One, can a subpoena, deuces tecum, be served to a non-party that is wanted to be a witness at the trial court who lives out of town more than 100 miles?
Well, remember one thing. I've heard this all my life. Rules are made to be broken. Especially these rules. These rules are unjust and unlawful. The rules of the common law is what belongs in the court. And if you're going into a court that is a common law process, in other words, a court of record, okay, which they'll tell you, oh, that's just a court that keeps a record. No, that's not what it is. A court of record identifies itself with the fact that it is a common law court ruled by the people. No judges allowed. You can't come into that court, judge. No judges allowed. So none of the minions are permitted into that court. Of course, they rule those courts too. But why do they get away with ruling those courts? They get away with it because of ignorance. We're all ignorant. I speak to myself first. I was as ignorant as everyone else is, or was. Some of us, of course, were coming, being enlightened and coming to the realization of what the true reality is and the difference between the true reality and the fiction that is in place. That rule will not apply. Okay, with a situation where none of the court rules, the rules that were created by the Rules Enabling Act, which is unlawful, unjust, you know, the Rules Enabling Act in itself, even if they tried to make the rules, just, is unjust. Because courts of law are run by maxims. Those are the rules of the court. The rules of the court is maxims, logic. Things that are obvious, the right thing, the just thing. That's what rules a court of law. Not the rules that they make up. Their rules are unjust. Sometimes they could make some sense, but one size does not fit all. There's always different situations, always different circumstances, all kinds of things. So, yeah, that Rule 45 would not apply in a court of law, a true court of law. And that's where we're heading to, is getting to courts of law. All right, next question.
Okay, it pertains to Rule 45 as well. Is a subpoena due to cecum only to be served during discovery, or can it be served afterward?
Well, there is a fairness in the court system. There, it is an, you know, I believe it's eight processes that takes you through a court system, and maybe we'll look at that one day to go through that. Once you pass a certain time, you can't go out and bring other things in. Now, there are things that are discovered during the process, okay, which makes all the sense in the world, whether whatever the rules they got, who knows and who cares. If it's logical and obvious, okay, and it's discovered as going through the process, and of course it could be pulled in, but you do have to give the other side full opportunity to understand and look at the information you found or the witnesses that are being that have been found or whatever the case may be. And they have time to look into that, question the person, you know, and go through that whole process before they actually get into the courtroom. Because everybody has to be fully informed. Fully informed. That's the key. So, yeah, there's ways to get around all that stuff. Again, if it's just and right, it's just and right. So the situation has to be looked at. But if it's something sneaky, then obviously that wouldn't be just to allow something that's sneaky go through the process. So, all right, next question.
Third question on the same topic. If a witness will be making a virtual Zoom appearance and was served a subpoena deuces tecum, how can one be expected to present the documents requested if not in person? Or can it request they be sent by email or mail?
Forget about it. Zoom is dumb. Look, if you go to court, that's it. Nothing else to talk about. We know there's really no big problem out there, but, you know, people want to put on masks, then we'll put on masks, go to court. That's their problem. You know, it may make sense if they have a case, you know, that, well, we ought to hold the case up until we can get past it. You know, if people want to go that route, I guess that could be applied to some degree. These Zoom things, and I get involved to some degree in the court going, you know, you call in and deal with it, and, you know, but it's all BS, and it's just that I'm dealing with the court no different than I would being there, you're not getting to the case. If the case is being tried, I wouldn't even think of doing it. I wouldn't want to be any part of it. I want to be in the courtroom. I want all the witnesses there. I want all the evidence there. And I want the other side there to defend themselves. And either they produce the case if they're the plaintiff, or I produce the case if I'm the plaintiff. And that's that. There is no other just way. So, okay. Anything else?
Nope. That's the last one, John.
Okay. So we're caught up on questions now, huh?
All right.
Okay. Any announcements?
Not really, no.
Okay. All right. I don't see Gerard. Is Gerard here? Or is Brent here?
I don't see either one.
All right, let me know if either of them come in.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll go right into Q&A. We have Rosalind. You got the... Let me see where that thing is. There it is. Go ahead, Rosalind. You got the mic.
Hi there, John. Yeah, I'm calling. This is kind of connected to our Committee of Safety, because in Allegheny County, I shouldn't say too much. It's just that it's so corrupt. It seems like we have a hard time, I think. This is just my impression. I have a hard time getting people to hear what I'm saying about the law taking precedence over statutes, or the law having its way in the face of all the corruption and the powerful people in control, unless there's an effect. And so, I mean, from the very beginning, I felt that way. I had to have some effect. It's just not enough. I know some people are going to hear it. Some people understand, and I think to some degree we all feel this way. We want to see action. We want to see some effect from our words. And so there's a situation that came up where the school board, we had the election, of course, in November, and one of the candidates who had the most votes according to their fraudulent election, because of course it was stolen as usual. But the one of the candidates did not take his position, his seat, because he says he got sick, and he was so sick he didn't expect, or he didn't, he was just, it was that bad that he just didn't feel he could serve, you know, in the, you know, to the capacity that's needed. So he did not take his position, and the board has, evidently Pennsylvania education statutes say that, and I actually have the section number and everything, I looked it up, that basically says, and I'm not reading it, but basically that if somebody doesn't or drops out of their seat, that the board can choose someone within a certain time period. So they opted to do it that way. They felt that even though this board, the new board, hadn't even taken their positions yet, so it was after the election, this guy decides he's not going to take a seat, and the board finds out before the new board is seated. So the board says, well, we're going to, and evidently the solicitor agreed or came to this conclusion that they can vote on who's going to take their position. Now, the person that we wanted on the board, one of our top people, he was way down the line, but he was the next person according to votes. And get this, that person had the most in-person votes. So you know that the people who got voted in didn't have as many as him, and they got voted in by mail-in ballots. But anyhow, that's besides the point, because this isn't really about fraud, voter fraud in that way. But I feel that, and I saw this in your book, actually. It's from, let's see, is it, I have it right here. You had it in a footnote. It was 16th American Jurisprudence, 2nd edition, section 177. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. It is impossible for both the Constitution and the law violating it to be valid. One must prevail. So that's just the first paragraph. And so to me, it seems like they're defrauding us of our vote just because they are not choosing. They didn't choose the guy who had the most votes. They chose someone else who actually, besides the point, but he's actually not a bad guy. He's a good guy. He's actually on our side. But this guy we wanted in, he's a true educator, and he really should be on. He would mix that board up. I mean, he would set some fires under their bums. So we really wanted him. And so I wanted to know from you whether you think, and can you still hear me?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Just make sure I'm talking so long. So I wanted to know if you felt that this is something we can actually, can we sue the board? I want to do something to show the people that this wins.
Yeah, well, now, how did they choose these people to get onto the ballot? Was it by caucus or was it by petition? So that's what the first thing you need to find out. Now, before I continue, you say you have a hard time explaining these people to between law versus statutes, and you're talking about the people in elective office, these people that are part of the board.
No, I'm talking about people, peers, you know, just friends, acquaintances, people who are
patriots. Well, then, you know, they
patriots.
Need to become educated, and I'll tell you what, the best way to educate any of these people, the best way to educate any of these people in the beginning, in my opinion, especially they don't know anything about National Liberty Alliance, they don't know the website, if you can get them to come to the first page, it'd be good. But if you really want to educate anyone real quick into the common law, share with them the Jurist Handbook. Extremely powerful. And it is just documented all the way through. It's just not pablum, it's not information, it's not documented, it doesn't. It leads everyone to the raw material, the facts of the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing to do if you want to get somebody on board to understand this. You know, that's why we need fully informed jurors, and that's why that handbook was written. But time, and that is, you know, we're creating now, we're creating PowerPoint presentations, which will be by audio, you know, video, I mean, which will have audio on it. And there'll be short videos, PowerPoint videos, where you would play to the jurists, you know, a 20-minute video or something, and then you'd stop and just talk a little bit about it, and then move on to the next one. So you get through, and you basically we're going through the whole handbook is what we're doing, okay? And of course, we get a copy of the handbook. Anybody who goes through that process, an eight-hour process, it's like going to a course, and then walking out with a handbook in their hand. They're going to know and understand. They're going to be amazed to begin with. You just reset their minds. You've given them a whole new, brand new mindset. And that's what we need. When you approach common law, you need a brand new mindset because we've been under fiction so long, but we don't know whether we're coming or going. We can't. We don't even have any bearing on what to do and what not to do and what's right and what's wrong sometimes to some degree. I mean, that's how bad it is. You know, the people that run our government is as honest and as just as the people who make the legislation for our government, who are the people who are in the courts and making decisions, and the administrator of the state or the United States. You know, the people that are running the government is as honest as they are. Of course, you'll get some people that have good, strong morals and don't participate, and they probably don't even last long because it's too sickening to stay around that place. It's just nothing but ugliness. I mean, I was involved with the committee man process. It's a dogfight, and it's disgusting, in my opinion. And so, you know, who wants to get involved in that? That's why we got a clean house. The whole place has to be cleaned. Now, going back to the situation, okay, first off, again, you want to get someone to understand, let them go through that handbook. That's number one. Get them to the front page on our website, and I think they'll click. Everything will click. Now, on the, if it's done by petition, you see on the petition, I'm sharing it right now, it says, I do hereby appoint persons, all of whom shall be registered voters within such political unit as a committee to fill vacancies in accordance with the provisions of the election law. And there's three people's names who are to be put in here. And what that means is if the person who ran for office for that position, And that goes right through the election, okay? If that person was to die or to fall out for some one reason or another, those three people get to choose the person to take that seat. That's what that means. Now, so I would go look for the petition and pull that out, see what's there, you know? The problem is it's probably it's done by party bosses. They probably put their own names in there and they're going to do what they want. So the party bosses get to choose anyway. It's just another corrupt thing. So, but it's something that you can show to them. The other thing is, of course, is that even if it's written that they could choose, okay, someone, that should only be a temporary thing. I mean, look, I think common sense, justness, would just rest in here. You can only fill that position temporarily if it necessary needs to be filled that way.
Until the next election. It is temporary till the next election. That's good. That would be 2 years in this case, but
well,
in most cases,
2 years
would be a little less.
Maybe a special election needs to be run. Look at that. That's. We need to revamp a lot of things, and it sounds to me that you could make a case to get a special election run, especially if that position is an important position. But look, here's my thinking. Get a committee of safety going. Become the power and the authority of the county. You become the consenters. The committee men eventually just fall away through attrition to begin with, and they're going to see the light, and they'll come over to us and learn what things need to be done and, you know, learn the common law and become one of the people, you know, bringing them back into the fold, so to speak. But look at, here's the thing. When you control that county, you get a couple of hundred people in the Committee of Safety. Word is out. Committeeman attrition is going through the floor. And you become the power of the county. You're working with the sheriff analogy. You've already made your visits. You go and read the Riot Act to these people and make it very clear. Look, this is the way it's going to go here. And if you you know, we'll take it into the court if we need to be. But the bottom line is, if you bring it a different direction, which is not just and honest, I think we're going to do a recall. We'll start working some papers on you. I mean, that's how, take control. When the government fears the people, you have liberty. That's fear of the government. The government will fear you. I will tell you, and I learned this because I was in the committee man process, and we were doing it the right way. We've discovered the right way to do it, but you still have to deal with all these people. But I will tell you, when the chairman walks into a room, it's like everyone's there to kiss his ring. Literally, it's almost like that, especially if you go to the really hardcore places. You go down here, excuse me, you go down here in New York, for instance, down to Westchester County or down into New York City. It's exactly how it is. But the thing is this, when a county chairman gets on the phone to any elected official and reads them the Riot Act and says, hey, we're not happy with you. You need to change your ways, and this is what we want you to do. Whoever's on the other side of that phone, that they're controlled by that county chairman within some political jurisdiction, they're going to be obedient to that guy, and they're going to do what that person says. That's that. The committee chairman reads them the Riot Act, and they obey. Why? Because they hold the power of them, these people being in their positions. Mm-hmm. They can put the word out and not allow any of the committee men to walk any papers for these people ever again. They can also do recalls, not that they do that often, but they could. They can put the threat in, and I think the threat is enough, and the people will comply. But there is a sense of obedience there to the party bosses, and we need to bring it back to we the people. That sense of obedience has to be to we the people through the committee man process of the county committee, which is part of, the committee of safety. That's the true committee man. It's the true committee right there. Everyone in the committee of safety, every single person in the committee of safety is a committee man. Okay, they may not be participating too much in most of the political process through the year. They get the reports back from the, on a monthly basis or however often the reports have to come in for whatever purposes from the political committee. Only at the time of running for putting these people on the ballots, the political committee sets everything up and sets up the interviews, then they let the whole committee know. We're having interviews for these people running for this office, that office. If you fall within those political subdivisions, you're welcome to come, listen in, and cast your vote on what you think and pipe up on what you think to these people and ask them questions so we could decide whether we're going to walk these people's papers or not and put them into office. This is what the committee men do, okay? And it's not a full-time job. It's during the primaries is when they're active. Okay, that's when they're active, during the primaries, and if they spend 40 hours a year, they've spent a lot. Most of it is in interviewing, and I think I find that very interesting, interviewing these candidates, having a piece of my mind to let them know what I'm thinking, and then at the end of the day, before they go, look at if you haven't taken our course on the Constitution, well, particularly the course on government by consent, which involves the Constitution in that course, if you haven't taken at least that course and probably the civics course, those two courses, you don't take those two courses, we're not going to support you. So we like what you're saying here, but we don't think you know the Constitution well enough. Go take the courses, come back, and we'll talk, and then we'll put you on the ballot, as long as you promise that you're going to be obedient to your oath. And not step outside your jurisdiction, whatever powers and authorities they may have. So that's, that's power. People need to take it up. That's power. And by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, we only have two people in the queue right now, *6 and 1 to get into the queue. All right, anything else? Rosalind?
Nope, that's it. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's take Ross. How you doing, Ross? You got the mic.
Hey, John. I'm trying. I did sign up to be the.
I got your email. Oh, okay. For that, I thought you were talking about also as a researcher too,
research,
right?
Research, yes.
Yeah, I did get your note on that. And I've just been so bogged down, I haven't been able to call for a meeting right now. I only got two, maybe three people that are going to be working in that group at the moment, but hopefully we'll get more. Anybody that's interested in doing some research with us, for many purposes. One is to bring back the sheriffs in counties that there are no sheriffs, but we need research, and a few other different things. So just send an email to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org and say, I'm interested in working on the research committee, and give us your name and phone number. And when we're ready to pull that group together and start working, we'll give you a call. And I'm thinking maybe 2 weeks down the line, roughly speaking, I hope to be caught up enough to be able to start working with that committee and start leading the committee into what kind of research we're going to choose first. We're going to deal with sheriffs first, probably, but there are other important subject matters we may have to deal with first. But we'll see. We'll have to work that out. But I think in about 2 weeks we'll have a meeting and of all the people interested in that committee, and we'll start working on it. And I'll start preparing papers for reports.
Yes, I'm asking about how can I access the contact information on National Liberty Alliance for information about people who live in Clackamas County.
Okay, all you need to do, and I'm going to go through this on the desktop right now. Okay, if you go over to the directory and click on the directory or click on district leaders, either or will get you to the same place. And on this, you'll find that the United States is broken up into 10 districts. Okay. What state are you in again?
I'm in District 1.
District 1. Okay.
Oregon,
so you, right
Washington.
There. Okay, so Oregon, all right. If you go down and you call your district leader, okay, Mel, give them a call and let them know that you're organizing the county and you want to connect with other people. Make sure that no one else has put their name up there already, because if they have, you can still put your name up there anyway. But if they have, you know, you want to make contact with them and start working with them to collect. But, yeah, once you get a hold of your district leader, they will give you the name, first name, and phone number. No email or anything, just first name and phone number of every person in your county and the surrounding, and all the other counties. They'll give you to the entire state, actually. And it'll be broken down by counties, because once you get things going in your county, you're going to want to call these other people in other counties, the ones close by anyway, and tell them what you're doing and ask them to join you when you're coming to have your meetings, so that they can come to the meetings and consider whether they want to do this in their county or not. Get them to our front page and say, hey, look, you want to find out exactly what we're doing? Go read the front page and follow through all those videos, and that's exactly what we're doing.
Yes. So. I tried to call that person and no one answers the phone.
Okay, I'll have to send that over to Francine. I'll talk with Francine. I'm sure she's on the line right now. I don't see her here, but usually she's here. Let me make a note of that. You know what? This is what you do. Send an email to Francine at nationallibertyalliance.org. Okay? And let me spell Francine for you. It's F-R-A-N, C as in Charlie, E, N as in Nancy, E. So F-R-A-N-C-E-N-E at nationallibertyalliance.org. Drop her a note. Let her know that you've been trying to get a hold of Mel and not answering what's going on. Okay?
Yeah, I'm also... I'm wondering how do they have a contact list on for the NLA leadership?
Well, most of the leadership is right in here, and the district leaders. Most of the leaders have taken positions. There's other people, of course. There's Jan, and Jan, I think, has taken a position.
Huh?
He's taken a position on. Yeah, well, he's taken a position in leadership two, district leader two, just to fill in, because we don't have anyone in district two. Anybody interested in becoming a district leader in District 2, which is California and Nevada, send us a mail. You can contact Jan, J-A-N, at nationallibertyalliance.org, just let them know you'd like to be the district leader, and we'll talk with you about it and what's involved. We do want to make, you know, we can make, we were supposed to make these lists available to anyone who signs up to be able to download them, and I was pushing to get that done, but I'm thinking maybe we'll leave it this way, because I think it's important that they make contact with someone at the national level to give this information and to be available to assist them in any information that they may need. And if they can't answer their questions or get them that information, they'll tell them, we'll get back to you, and they can come up the lines looking for that information. And if necessary, they can come to me for that information, and then they can then give it to that person. But we need to make that connection. We got to get this going to energize and to help friends make friends. For instance, if a district leader has a friendly relationship with an individual in one county and has also a friendly relationship with an individual who's in another county, and then someone's coming in and they're new, you know, they can kind of bring people together, you know, and introduce them to each other, and especially close counties by, say, hey, why don't you go visit, see what they're doing, and vice versa, and help each other out. You know, we need to work together on this. This is how we can control our government. Government by consent is a joint act. All the people that want to get involved participate.
Mm-hmm. Because one time I find your guys' list for the senior leadership of the NNA, they had a list for Jan, you and the project manager of NNA. That's Francine.
Right. Well, we have also site contacts, okay? Now, on site contacts, let's see, we have, who do we have up here? We have, of course,
Jan.
Contact to National Liberty Alliance mailing address and our fax. We have Jan, of course, and he's the national leader. We also have the technical issues, you calls numbers up here. And there's another way. You can click on tech support up here, and a page will open up, and it says here, read this page before using the form. This is for tech support only. This form does not go to National Liberty Alliance. Okay, so it goes directly to the tech support. And but you got to read carefully before contacting the tech support. Read the following first and go through all the details, and then you send your information, and then one of the techs will get back to you. I believe that's through call. Now, of course, we have, as we were looking at before, a director. We have other individuals. Okay, we also can go further in this, and you can click on your state. Okay, and you can find other individuals within your state that are active, and you can make contact with them, and you know, kind of work together. And especially if their county is close, you can really work together. But here here's someone Brady signed up in that particular state. What was this, Alabama? Alabama, and his phone number is there. Let's see. What state are you in? Oregon, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay, let me go to Oregon. Where is Oregon? There's Oregon. Okay, we only have one person in Lyon County, Peter. Oh, actually, two. There's you. You're Ross. There you go. I would make contact with Peter and get a relationship going with Peter and discuss with him what he's doing, and if you and collaborate to the best you can. But also, especially if it's a county close by, how far away is Lyon County from you? Do you know?
Not that close.
Okay, but you can collaborate on the phone, get some ideas and thoughts, and communicate. Let me see. I know some states are more active than others. Let's look at New York, for instance. Okay, New York, we've got one, two, three, four, five counties in process. So, okay, so get a hold of Francine for that.
Yes, I'm trying to find people to help me organize Clackamas County Community Safety. That's why.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah, get a hold of Francine, and Francine will get a hold of Mel, I think it was, that was in, and make sure that they answer the phone, and that should not be. It's very important that anybody gives us a call, that we should respond at least within 24 hours, you know. We don't expect them to respond right away, but within 24 hours we should be able to respond, at least for this business here, anyway. And technical support, the same thing, I think hopefully even quicker, but, you know, 24 hours is reasonable.
Did I also have a toxic caller before?
Huh? What'd you say?
The one is the technical call. The one who's in charge of technical support is called. C-A-L.
Oh, Carl. No, well, he spells his name with a K instead of a C. K-A-R-L.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He leads our most of our technical support here, and the person you want to get to for the phone numbers and stuff would be Francine right now, and Francine should be able to assist you to get that person to call you to give you the info, or she'll get it for you or something. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Anything else?
Mm-mm, that's it.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, I guess Gerard and Brent aren't in yet, huh? I guess we'll keep going. Okay, let us take our next caller. Let's see, it's Charlotte from Hawaii. You got the mic.
Hey, John.
How you doing?
Charlotte from Hawaii. I was trying to do my civics course today, and I sent an email to Francine and to Mail, but since I was on and you had a lot of time, or a lot of openings, I thought I'd just chime in. But when I was on the lesson 10 of Bill Thornton, I listened to the speech, but there was no questions to answer. It didn't come up, so there's like a glitch or something.
Okay, there was lesson 10 with Bill Thornton.
Yes, sir.
No cues, no questions. Okay, I'll make a note of that also. And I know we were having some problems with our database. That was the major problem we had a couple of weeks ago. And we're having problems, I believe, with the courses. I think people were complaining. But hopefully we got it all fixed. When was the last time you tried to get out there to try to get past 10?
I just went to do that today, sir.
And still, okay. All right, I'll make a note of it, and I'll get the message over to Carl also. But you reported it to Carl?
I heard what you said. I can forward that email from Francine and you, our mail to him as well. So
yeah, Carl's email is carl@nationallibertyalliance.org, K-A-R-L, and his phone number and contact information is up there, and also of course you can.
So thank you.
Yeah, you could put something here under tech support right here on the website, which is a form that you could fill out and send in, and I'll drop Carl a note also. I know he's really, really busy. He was away for a week, and you know, he runs his own business, and he volunteers his time with us, so sometimes we wait a few days before he gets back to us, but he does try to keep up with what he can. So, okay?
Thank you for your time. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. You
Happy
too.
New Year.
Yeah,
Happy
John,
New Year. Yes?
I got an email from somebody today that was having trouble with the civics course. And it's still not up to par. It's not functional.
Okay. I'm not too sure what we're going to do about that. We're going to have to get a hold of Carl to see if he can make the repair, or if we got to go down to Barton and have them do the repair. And well, I don't know what they can be involved with. I think with the civics course, well, if I can get access into the civics course, I might be able to make the repair. I'm waiting for Carl to get back to me, and we keep missing each other. So hopefully, maybe tomorrow, if he's listening tonight, maybe he'll call me tomorrow. So if I can get in there, I might be able to go through the whole process and see where the glitch is and make the repair.
Okay.
Okay, thanks, Dan. All right, so we're going to work on that. These courses are very important to us to keep them up and going, because it's the driving force of our education. So... okay, let's go to our next caller. Let's see, Mary, you got the mic. What state are you from, Mary?
Hi, I'm in Wisconsin.
Mary from Wisconsin. Go right ahead, Mary.
Thank you. I was just inquiring, you know, we were discussing earlier about the corruption and the politicians and recalls and everything, and I mean, it's the main topic of everything nowadays, but one of the questions that I have, and just kind of get some feedback and maybe get your insight or input on it, I'm coming from the perspective until we're transitioning over and we get our committee of safeties going strong in our counties in Wisconsin, I'm really leaning towards maybe pulling people together to try to get a temporary restraining order on the Dominion machines so that we can put kind of a stop block on it so that we can get back to the basic counting of ballots rather than relying on the Dominion.
Well, in order to get back to the counting of ballots, we have to bring things back to the people. I wouldn't worry too much about that right now because, believe me, Trump's working on that. And just recently, a lot of information came out into the media. Of course, they're not reporting on it, but it's pouring out there concerning all of the corruption and all of the 50,000 people here and 20,000 people there that were voted from the graves. I mean, huge, huge numbers.
Right.
And so all of that, you know, it's percolating now. It's all part of the plan to percolate into the system, and eventually things are going to change. Now, the way the process is working, again, remember, they've stolen everything from the people. The people do nothing. Absolutely. The only thing they do, go vote. Yeah, that's it. You have nothing else. You can't control the courts. You can't control the political process. The party bosses control that whole political process, and you can't do much about it. Okay? But we have to take it all back. That's what we have to do. And now the state pays people to count the votes. Well, not to count the votes, actually to sit there and go through the cards and get your signature and tell you what machine to go to and all that stuff. All right. That should be, well, that's okay that they pay people, but I have a feeling a lot of that is political favors, and that we don't want. We want regular people there because we do see a lot of the corruption is involved with those people that are involved with a lot of the corruption. For instance, we heard the situation where, you know, you mark the things with a marker versus a pen. And to certain people they'd give the marker to, which discredited the vote, and the other people they'd get the pen, something like that. So that was one of the things. So they're participating in the criminality. We, the people, the committees of safety, need to take control of this. We need to go, once we become powerful enough, once we know, we're being known in our counties and our election districts, and particularly by the Board of Election, they know who we are. And I would definitely make a visit to the Board of Election. Once you have enough people, you get 200 people show up at the Board of Election saying, hey, we're here to see, the commissioner. I think they call him the commissioner of the board in that county. We're here to talk to that person. And believe me, they're going to start listening. But look, once you're getting things going in your county, word's going to travel of the work you're doing and what your anticipation is and requirements. So we need to get back into taking control of that process. Let me just finish. What we need to do, for instance, is if they need six or eight people in a particular election district, they should come to the Committee of Safety and ask for six or eight people. And they would get paid for that process if they want to do it. Or we can pull anyone in for that process. It doesn't have to be. But we want to make sure it's not someone being pulled in by the political animals and the fix is in with them. So that's number one, to make sure that that process is okay. The other thing, and this is the committee man's job, okay? This is the Committee of Safety who is the committee man. And remember, every person in the Committee of Safety is a committee man, just as much as every person in the Committee of Safety is part of the militia. That's an important part of the whole process. But in any event, and that needs to become active, there's a militia, a subcommittee called the militia. But anyway, the committee man needs to be, you know, someone needs to be at that election district. If there are five machines there in one particular, which would be five different election districts housed in maybe a fire department or whatever the case may be, so you would need five committeemen there, okay? And since we have committeemen in every single election district, and we can even borrow from others that have more if necessary, but the thing is they should be there at the end of the day for the counting of the votes. And, yeah, they can have their machines do all the counting they want, That's fine. We don't have a problem with that. But as soon as that machine is closed down and the polls are closed, the people need to be able to come into that building and view literally the counting of the votes. And if it takes an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours, you see, there's enough people involved, okay? Let's take an election district where I'm at. We have, I doubt we have many more than maybe 400 or 500 people that would be voting in my particular election district, if that many. But let's just say this one election district. Let's say there's 500 people that were voting. So we have to go through counting the votes for 500 people. Every one of these machines is dealing with a different election district, okay? So you'll have, maybe five election districts within a housed in maybe a fire department or the town hall or wherever they're doing the polling, you know? So we would be able to vote, count the votes, number one, and also the electronic voting count can continue if they want. That's fine, but we're still going to count the votes. Now, that can become quite complex, but I think it could be organized, and I think we can do it. If the people want to do it, we can do it, but then they have to understand that means you got to do it. You know, people got to volunteer, come in and count the votes. We need to do, and we need enough people to do it. We can't be haphazard about it. Maybe those people should be paid for that, too. Maybe that should be a paid position. It's only coming in for that one night at the end of the day and count the votes. So you might be there all night, so they should get paid. Right now, the people who are counting the votes by hand, they're all being paid. All the people at the polling polls are being paid. You know, it's not a full-time job. They work once or twice a year, and that's that, you know. And I'm sure they get paid well. I heard that they do get paid pretty good, so... What do you did you want to add to that now or comment on that?
Oh no, thank you for explaining that. So what you're saying is, regardless of, I'm totally about the system. I think what we have, what you've said is spot on, and I think we really do need to bring it back. And that that's why I'm really excited about expanding our Committee of Safeties in Wisconsin, so that we can have subcommittees and we can all work together to be there and be present for the count. That is so important. So what you're saying is it's okay. I'm worried about the machines, because regardless if we count or not, it's the manipulation on the numbers. But I guess with everything with that's happening behind the scenes, that's will be taken care of then.
Right. Well, the political animals can't be involved in this. And the political animals are the Republicans and the Democrats. It's got to be the people who are outside of the party. Now, it doesn't mean that a person can't be a Republican or a Democrat and be part of the Committee of Safety. Of course they can be. They're going to take a vow to begin with. We're a vow to the governor of the universe. We all take that vow to operate with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And we expect that from each other. And we will police each other. And we will correct each other. We have to get that kind of an attitude. You know, we have to get that morality out up in front, okay?
Right.
And once we start doing that and we become a more moral people, at least in public, that'll be expressed to our children, and we'll also be blessed for it, and things will become righteous and just, and that's what we should expect, okay? So... You know, again, you can't, and I wouldn't even think about going to court to get rid of the machines. Let's just have government by consent. Let the people step up and just take it over. We don't need the courts. Go away. We don't need to deal with you. This is political. It's our business. We'll take care of it. This is the attitude people have to have, because if we have this kind of an attitude, enough of us has this kind of an attitude, nobody's going to bother us. The courts are not going to bother us, you know. But we have to have the attitude, because we have to, these people in office must fear us. And the fear that they must have is the fear of their loss of job or to be exposed as a criminal. That's the fear that they need to have. And as long as we keep doing what we have to do and being active, and we they'll be exposed. We'll see what's going on. See, in my opinion, we could have everyone, we could fill all the offices up with Hitlers, okay? As long as we, the people, are watching and letting them know, you break your oath, you're out of office. If we catch you and you did something and it's criminal, we're going to push for an indictment on you. See, as long as you have that fear, they're not going to do anything. They may do something sly, you know, behind the scenes, but that would be few and far and in between, I would think, as long as the attitude is there that we're watching. We're watching.
Okay, great.
We'll make statesmen's out of them.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for that explanation. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Hey, by the way, the queue is empty. I thought there was another person in there. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. It's only 10:30. Did Brent show up? I guess not.
I haven't seen him. I don't see him yet.
All right, well, hopefully people have questions. I don't know what particularly I want to do. I mean, I'm trying to just fill some time in and talk about something if I can. Maybe we'll take a look, and I'll read a little bit. Hang on a second. Let me look at Starter Committees of Safety. Let's look at these handbooks. Did I have one open? Yeah, here it is. I think it's open already.
Yeah, somebody in the queue now.
Oh, okay. Tina. Okay. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, and if no one gets into the queue after we finish with Tina, maybe we'll just look at this a little bit at this handbook. But Tina, you got the mic. Welcome.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. What state are you from, Tina?
I'm from Washington.
Okay, Washington.
And actually, it's not necessarily a question. It's more of a comment about the handbook.
Uh-huh.
I don't feel like it's in the right format. I don't know. It should be a step by step on how to start the community safety. We have that.
Let me go to that. Let me get to the handbooks and tools. We have two different books. The main book here is Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook, and that's a 71-page handbook, and it's step-by-step, point-by-point, from the very beginning all the way through creating the committee of safety. Now, we broke away the committee man handbook for the sole purpose of focusing in on the particular committee that deals with the political committee. We did the same thing with the militia. We have a militia handbook also, so whoever is running the militia subcommittees, that handbook is necessary for them in order to operate, and they can enhance on that and add to some degree on that. What they have to remember about the militia handbook is that we're working off of a history and documented information in order to lay out the do's and the don'ts and what the militia is all about. And that research was done by Brent Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and he wrote the book on the militia of the several states. And then him and I together collaborated on setting up a handbook for the rules of the militia and their operations, what's involved with that. And we also worked together. What we did actually is took his handbook and created a course out of that. So we do have a militia course. And but it's the same thing with the committeeman now. I mean, what I may do is maybe I'll create a committeeman course also when I get the time, because that might be helpful. But there's two books. One is that seem to be the same, but let's just look at them real quick. One is called the Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook. Okay, and I had to write a separate book for this because, and this is about 43 pages. Because it gets involved in the political process, the political system, how the committeeman system is set up and how it works. And pretty much we have to do the same thing. And it breaks up the different political subdivisions that are involved. And everyone doesn't need to know all that. Only a small group of people need to know the specifics and the details and work the system to set it up for the interviews where everyone can come to the interviews, you know, and then everyone will walk the papers. And that's how it'll work.
No, I'm talking about is the basics, like email address for your county. And I do have a question about the seal. I went on Staples' website and I couldn't find where to customize the seal, so I wasn't able to get that done.
Well, I remember when I originally done the seals. And I've done a few seals already. And when I've done the seals, I remember it was a little confusing. And
yeah.
I tried to be as specific as I could be. But remember, you can go down to Staples and and they'll work it right over the desk with you.
Yeah, I'll do that one.
We strongly suggest to use, you know, set the seal up the way so we can be uniform across the entire United States. So.
Yes, just like all the other ones.
Right. And you can take the picture of what we have. I believe we got a picture in the book.
Yeah,
you
there
can take
is.
That, yeah, you can take that picture and say, this is what I want, but I want my state, my county, you know?
Yeah. So. Okay. So I'll just do that. I'll go down and have it done.
Yeah. And again, I'll double check when I get a time to go through that to see if they switch something around and whether I have to rewrite parts of it or something, you know?
Yeah, you might have to, yeah.
So,
okay.
Seal. Okay, anything else?
No, I think that'll do it.
Okay, Committee of Safety Seal. Safety Seal.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, what is it, Kearney from New Jersey? How do you spell, how do you pronounce your name, Kearney?
Hello?
Yep, what's your first name?
Oh, my name is Barry, I'm sorry.
Oh,
how you
okay,
doing, John?
Man. Good,
I was up over there where I went to dinner that night about a month ago.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
How are you?
Good,
yeah, I'm with Kevin. Yeah, good, good. I'm with Kevin. Me and Kevin Cohen went up there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Hey, remember when we went down to that other meeting afterwards, and we listened to some of those people talking, and we connected.
I do.
We connected.
I do. What happened with
woman.
That girl?
Well, that's what I don't have her information. I'm trying to get her information. I haven't heard back from her, so I was hoping. I think maybe
well,
one of you guys might have had that info, too, if you got anything from her card or something.
I was wondering what happened with that. Her name is Allison. She does go to that church. All you need to do is
yeah,
go back
you know
to that
what I said, do? I think I'll do that is probably go down on a Sunday where I may catch up with her at that point, you know.
Yeah, or you find out, you know, get a... you know, get a schedule from the church and find out when they have those meetings. She was pretty involved in that meeting there that we were at, you know.
Yeah, I want to speak to those people. Yeah.
She was very much interested, and she also said that her husband, this was right up her husband's alley, that he was very much interested in this. I think she would be a mountain mover.
I believe so, too. And we need a mountain mover here in Dutchess County, so, and to work with maybe in other counties, surrounding counties. So, yeah, that's why I was thinking the same thing, and I was hoping maybe if she had time, she'd maybe work with us at the national level, too, because she was a very informed, educated, and structural person. Very well
structured. Right, and you could tell she was motivated.
Yeah.
I had COVID for a couple of weeks, like a week after I came from the meeting. I'm not saying I got it from the meeting. I think it went.
Look, it might have been just the flu. You know, they're calling it COVID. COVID's a cold, and really, there's no test I'm hearing for COVID. It's just
actually, you can get a test over at Duane Reade. It's about $24. They give you two test tubes, and I did test myself, and it did come up positive for it. It was probably that Omicron. I call it Omicron. But, I had it for about a week, but then I was pretty tired after. I did lose my taste and smell. But anyway, yeah, I got over it. And a little weak, but, the last couple of days I've been getting out. And it's a little tough in the beginning, but I'm
fine. Well, that particular thing is running its course. You know, after time, those things weaken, and you get a little bit of the symptoms, and it's not as bad as it was in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Actually, I think that I think the COVID-19 has really lost its punch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really do. I mean.
I don't think it ever really had a big punch, to be honest with you. I mean, look, said people were dying all over the place. They had freezer trucks filled with bodies and stuff. And people went down to these hospitals down in New York City that they claimed. And it was like a ghost town. And there was no freezer trucks filled with bodies. There was no backup of people coming in and overloading the whole system. It didn't exist. And look at what they did in Central Park. They set up all those tents out there in Central Park, and they didn't even use it. They sent a ship down there. It didn't even get used. You know?
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah, I was just going to bring up about the ship. And, I got in touch with a friend of my girlfriend's, his name is Dan. I did contact a lot of people to get on the call. I hope they're listening in. I did contact Dan before getting on the call, and I said, Dan, the national meeting is on now, and I sent the telephone number over, you know. So I'm trying to get it out there. And Kevin and myself, we want to get flyers made up and word it right. And there are a lot of people that are very frustrated in this country, and they're throwing their hands up in the air, saying to themselves, well, what do we do? How do we get rid of these tyrants? They don't know. So the thing is that, you know, we have a job to educate people and to, I mean, even educate ourselves. I mean, I don't know as much as you do, but by no means. But so we need to move forward, yeah. But her name was Allison. Look,
if you organize a meeting, and right. I would hope you would do it with as many of the counties down as possible. I mean, I went down a few times and spoke to people in New York City down in Manhattan, and people right. from Queens and Brooklyn and the Bronx came, you know, it was a nice big group. And so if you can organize to someplace centrally located somewhere, I'll come down and speak if you want. You know, I'll do that anywhere in New York State. And then once I get New York State together, I'll do it in Connecticut also. If people want to, well, I might even go into Jersey, at least Northern Jersey.
Well, I joined this group about 8 years ago. I didn't really join them. I got involved in it. A friend of mine was in it, and it was called LaRouche.org. And these guys were pretty motivated. They got out there when Obama was in office. And they had a placard of Obama with a Nazi with a Hitler mustache.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look. Yeah, this is what we have to take this country back. They spoke about the Constitution quite often, but they actually got out with tables in the street, and they gave out pamphlets and information, and a lot of people came over, and they were very much interested because there was that anxiety and anguish that this crumb got in office, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he acted like a tyrant too, so you know that might be an approach also. But what we were thinking about was getting a lot of flyers out and contacting people. You know, we have to word it right. Like we would say something like, "Listen, are you complacent? Are you happy with the way things are going in government right now?" Don't give up. Don't throw up your hands. We have a meeting, a constitutional meeting that you might want to get involved in. Give us a call, and we'll leave our telephone numbers there. And you know, we want to start a meeting over at Kevin's house.
You ask him something like, "Would you like to have government by consent, the way our founding fathers set it up?" You know,
exactly.
Come here, you know. Yeah. You can work, I'm sure, and we have some flyers up online. I don't know whether we got them back up or not. I'll have to take a look. Matter of fact, I think there might be some flyers right in here in this section. I added a lot of the tools in here, too. You can take it. Here's a flyer. Here's a Committee of Safety flyer, and number 3. We have 2 of them. So this is the 1, and there's another one, number 2, and I think we have number 1. And you can do whatever you want. I mean, you can mix things around, you can make it simple. This was a little more complex. This is something I would give out in the meeting, you know.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I think what I'm going to do is the next time I go out and speak to people is I'm going to print out a lot of the jurist handbooks. And people that are really, really want to get involved and are signing up to get the Committee of Safety going, I'll give them that handbook to read and say, look, read this because it'll give you the proper mindset of law, what law should be, what common law is, and a mindset of, you know, that we are the lawmakers. We're the sovereign, not them. We're the lawmakers, not them.
Right.
We get to nullify anything they do. We've given them authority to write law to control themselves. It's called equity. And to control commercial activities, you know. But that's it. We didn't give them the law. And then we have the ability to nullify any of those laws that they make up. We could just say, no, we don't like it. It's out of here. It's not part of the thing. But,
right.
You know, and in a court of law, they don't belong at all. you know, no judge belongs in a court of law, only magistrates. Now, all judges are magistrates, so they can put the magistrate hat on and come in, but they can't participate in any way, shape, or form as a judge. They can make no decisions, zero decisions in a court of law.
Yeah, but yeah, I was listening to the prior calls, and you were talking about how, you know, we can go in there and we can publicly go into the election polling places and actually count the votes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be, you probably get arrested if you try to do that right now. But,
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I was going to say, do you think they're going to let us do that?
Absolutely, because you see, you got to understand who controls that whole process. The Board of Election controls that whole process. Well, guess what?
Right.
The commissioners that run those things, the Board of Election, you got two commissioners, one on the Republican side, one on the Democratic side, and that tells you everything, really. But, you know, you have these two commissioners there, they're appointed people, so they owe their allegiance, you know, they owe their allegiance ultimately to whoever appointed them, okay? So if you can't fix them at the office, you fix the person who appointed them and you read them the right act. But you have to have power to do this. And power is 100, 200 or more people with the knowledge and understanding and making themselves known, this is who we are and this is what we're doing. And one of the places you do want to visit once you take control of certain parts of your government by putting them on notice, you know, show up with your whole force at maybe with the legislators I guess a lot of counties have county legislators. I don't know why, but you know, but anyway, show up at one of their meetings. You tell them, hey, we want to come up and talk, and they say, okay, yeah, come up in this state here. And you show up with 200 people. You go into the town meetings. You show up with 200 people. You know, that's power. That's clout. They get to know
right.
who you are, and you express to them what you're doing, and you give them a copy of your paperwork, your resolutions, and everything, your charter, and you know, sealed and with a nice binder and everything. And believe me, when you walk away, they're going to be scratching their head and be worried about you. Okay, but it's the same thing with the Board of Election. You go up there and you read them the Right Act. This is the way it's going in this county. We're not dealing with this no more. We're going to count the votes. We're going to do it lawfully. We're tired of party bosses, and this is what we're doing. And if you don't like it, then we're going to have you removed from your job.
People have to take control.
This is up to us. They robbed it from us. We want it back.
Exactly. And if we're informed on a grand scale on these subjects, they can't refute the law. So
absolutely not. And remember, you have the sheriff with you at this point, too. You see, that's key also. You have the sheriff working with you on this point, too. See, once you sell the sheriff on the reality in opposed to the fiction, and they come to understand and realize not only, you know, the power of the people, but their power, their authority, their job, what they're to do, you know, they're with you. You can ask the sheriff or if he'd send one of his deputies with you to go down and talk to these people at the Board of Election. So you're coming down there with a little bit of force also. But the thing is, look at these people are political animals. They're appointed, that run the Board of Election. They're the ones that take care of all of the voting system throughout the county. They organize it and put all it together and hire the people. They go through all of that. Okay, that's what they do.
Right.
We need to fix it and say you're gonna. We don't want minions working our votes. We want the people. That's what we want. Okay. So you come to us, and we will pick people out that are interested in this job for, you know, once a year or whatever, and you pay them, and they'll do the job that has to be done. But as far as the counting of the votes, we're coming in to count the votes.
Wow.
Of course, but you have to have everything set up and being working in power, being known in the county at this point. By this point, before you even get there, they'll have heard of you. Because the whole system is coming down. What I found out is that the state committeemen, they actually have positions which doesn't even exist even in election law. It's really a party position. But in any event, they claim to be elected state committeemen, and then I found out it's the commissioners at the Board of Election that become the state committeemen. They're all part of the wheel. They're part of the situation. There's a payola there. There's There's power there. There's authority. There's money there, okay? Because the fix is in. It's a powerful position if you're holding that position in the county, you know?
Now, you said you were telling me that a lot of these sheriffs,
mm-hmm.
they were in Queens, Brooklyn, and Manhattan, they were appointed, yeah. right?
Yes.
Well, how do you get around that?
We got a committee pulling together, if you want to participate with us, doing research. And we're going to be researching how that happened, if there ever were sheriffs in that those counties, how it came to be that they became appointed. You know, we need to do the research in order to take it into the court. I already got some information on Connecticut, and we have someone involved in Connecticut that has already got a lot of research done. I got to collaborate with them, but there's other places. You know, we got 7 counties here in New York. They got I think 8 counties in Connecticut, but there are other places that there are no sheriffs. There's I think 2 other states, and another state that's trying to get rid of sheriffs. So we have to get enough information on all of them, and then bring the whole thing into the federal court. And we have to do it when we have a honest court, though. But there's different ways. It depends on how it happened. For instance, I'll give you Connecticut. They did it by referendum in Connecticut.
So the people took a vote on it.
Well, that was unlawful to begin with, and the legislators were involved in that, putting that through the process, working it out with the governor. So what we would do is go to correct that through the legislators first, and I'd write a paper once we get all the history and information laid out, and then lay out the illegalities of it, the unlawfulness of it, the unconstitutionalism of it, and how the common law requires a common law a law enforcer. And that they can't do this. And the most important thing that for them, it's not the most important thing to us, but it is a leverage. It's a codification that is very powerful for us. And that is in the Connecticut, as well in the New York state constitution, and the Connecticut constitution requires the election of a sheriff. They didn't change the constitution. You can't go to the people and do a referendum to say, hey, why don't we get rid of the Second Amendment? That's mob rule. That's a democracy. We're not a democracy. Democracy is
mob
rule.
We're a constitutional republic.
That's right. We're a natural law republic is what we are. And so, you know, we bring that to their attention, and we try to reason with them to nullify the work that we'll tell them we're nullifying it right now. So therefore, you now start exercising, the job that we put you in to do, and retract all that and bring our sheriffs back, get special elections immediately because this is an emergency, and bring them back into the game. Now, they're probably going to reject that, okay? And that's okay, but at that point, that's when we go into federal court. But, you see, I think the environment's going to be totally different once we get to the other side. And everybody, I think, knows by now what I mean by the other side is that the military has come in. People have been, and there's a lot of arrests going on right now. There are all kinds of things going on. I don't know if people have been following up on the news.
Well, I was reading certain information about indictments.
Mm-hmm.
Certain people in office were indicted, but I guess the sheriffs are still waiting to bring that to fruition. Am I correct?
Well, you know, it's being released a little at a time. I'm looking for the page here on news. Let me see. Let's see, Trump Health. Pretty sure it's under here. Great Awakening interview. No, Colbert. Today's issues. I thought it was that. No, it's not. Up to date news. I guess that's it. It's far on the bottom. I don't know if you're listening to the X-22 report, because he just covered that information today on a lot of the things, people that have been arrested, people have been removed. He laid out a whole thing there. I said, wow, you know, I didn't realize that much has
Amazing.
Happened already. You know,
Amazing.
He also spoke about the release of a lot of information of all of the fraud in the election. I mean, you got counties with 20,000, another county with 30,000 or 40,000 people that were dead, and they came up and rose from the grave.
False ballots.
You know, yeah.
All
of that, it's coming out now, and it's going to start to churn through the system, and it's a lot of pressure on these people. And then the big one, look at the first big arrest. Q had mentioned a long time is going to just blow people's minds. It's just going to be so huge, And that to me is, I think the biggest arrest, the most important arrest, in my opinion, is the arrest of Obama. Hillary Clinton's in there too, but Obama, I think, is the key. Because look at, he was a sleeper, okay? He wasn't
he was
an American citizen, you know?
Yeah.
And
I believe he was a real radical incendiary, I tell you.
Absolutely.
This guy, oh boy, oh boy.
Look at, he said in public, he says the end of the republic never looked so good. I mean, just think about that. An ex-president of the United States stating that in some, you know, activity somewhere or something. The end of the republic never looked so good.
Yeah, there were a lot of things that went on. And in other words, there was another time when Obama met with Putin, and he said, wait a little while, let me get in first. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes, I do.
Oh, let me get in office first. Let me go. You know, then I can do whatever. And, you know, I spoke to a guy from Russia. It's a funny story. This guy, I just spoke to him three nights ago. He drives a bus in Queens. This guy comes from Russia, and we were talking about this very issue. And he says, I came here to this country. I was in the Russian military. He says, I got away from Russia. I came to this country. He says, now I see the same thing happening here. What happened in my country? A guy like that is powerful. You know why? We in the United States, we are used to, or we don't recognize the power change. But a guy from Russia, or a guy people who were in the former Soviet Union or a communist country like the Czech Republic or Hungary, wherever it was, right? Or Romania. I know pastors, they came from Romania. He says, these Americans don't understand this. We've seen this before in our country, the control that was taken from the people. This is communism that's what's going on over here. He says, why don't the American people recognize this? I was like, wow, we are in trouble.
We have I believe it's on this page, documentary with Griffin, anyway. And
was that the same
Edward
guy
Griffin.
Griffin.
He's the same guy, yes. And he's done about 20 different documentaries, okay? And I've got them all. I believe I got them all. If anybody's aware of any that I'm missing, let me know, and I'll go search it out and find it and get it up on our website. I'm trying to see if I can find it. There is a guy that came from Russia, and he was, I forget what they call him, sort of like the Gestapo. What do they call him in Russia? The police or something like that?
No, Stasi or something. Stasi?
Well, here it is, yeah. This is the guy right here, How to Brainwash a Nation. Now, this guy here came from Russia, okay? And let's see.
He had an outstanding career with Novosti, which was the, and still is, I should say, the press arm or the press agency of the Soviet Union. It turns out that this is also a front for the KGB.
He escaped to the West
in 1970 after becoming totally disgusted with the Soviet system, and he did this at great risk to his life. He certainly is one of the world's outstanding experts on the subject of Soviet propaganda and disinformation and active measures. When the Soviets use the phrase ideological subversion, what do they mean by it?
Ideological subversion is the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There's no mystery. There's nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage, intelligence gathering, look, it's intelligence at all. Many defectors of
And I'm not going to play the whole thing, but in this interview, this guy talks about this very same thing that you had mentioned, and he talks about when he came to America, he said, I'm so surprised they're so far advanced to being like us. Everything is in place. See, there's only one thing that has stopped these people, okay? It's called the Bill of Rights. Even though the people are ignorant to their heritage, they're ignorant to the common law, they're ignorant to the Constitution, nevertheless, being born in this country, we're born with a certain mindset. don't tread on me. Don't take my gun. You know, we got that kind of a mindset, but we don't have the knowledge. If we have the knowledge connected with it, and then the fiction becomes even more exposed. But yeah, we have a serious problem, and it is obvious. And this guy makes that point clearly. And like he says, if they take the bananas out of their ears, strange.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah,
that's a good one.
But if you take it out, you'll see, you'll hear, and you'll see what's really going on. You know.
I did hear this guy, and there was a segment on YouTube where the guy was in the KGB, and he defected over to this country, and he spilled the beans on what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Khrushchev meant by "we will take your country without firing a bullet."
That's right.
It was all psychological. It was PSYOP. It was all PSYOP, and it was taking over here socially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through media, through higher education, and that you could see higher education today. It's very leftist, and it's more on the Marxist level. That's where this critical race theory and everything else comes from. You know?
Here's a page I just put up today. Okay, it's under today's issues. It's called Mass Formation Psychosis. Okay,
mm-hmm.
People really need to look at this. And there's three videos up here. Amazing Polly is amazing. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but this woman is amazing. She does some heavy, heavy, heavy duty research. And, you know, she recently done something, All Things Q, you know, and she talks about you know, what had taken place and the obviousness of certain things and so on. You can get to her site, you know, you can find her site off of, she's also under the news, I believe. Yeah, up-to-date news, we have her on that page, for instance. X22, Amazing Polly, and Christian Patriot News. If you're watching those three news medias, okay, I think you're really up to date on what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, there's other things also that I should put up there. Okay, thanks, Terry. There's other things also I'll be putting up here that I should have put up here because there are a few other news places where you get actually different kind of a news. It's not as in-depth and behind the scenes as this, but it's good stuff. And it's trustworthy. But going back to this page here, okay, you really should everybody should take a look at this page and watch these videos. Mass Formation Psychosis. This is amazing.
Wow.
Okay, and there's three videos on it. Okay, and then there's an op-ed, I guess it's called, written by this guy Matthew Mavak. Just on December 30th, concerning the same thing. So, very informative, eye-opening, blew my mind. Mass formation psychosis. And how what they're doing with the people, how they're accomplishing it. I mean, once she opens and lays this out, you say, oh, my God, it's so obvious. Then what happens is once you set the people up in a certain position, in a certain mindset, in a certain problem, and you put them in through stress of all kinds of problems, you know, just being isolated is one of the key things in order to pull this off. And they talk about this. And in that process, once the mindset is there and the people are so frustrated and they're just, you know, look at people dying to get back out in the sun. They say, stay out of the sun, but that's the cure, you know. And people don't even realize that. But the thing is that they're all set up for mass hypnosis now, you see. And well, and you could destroy the mass hypnosis by knowledge. Once you're aware of the situation, then it can't affect you. And that's one of the key things. But that's where we're at. That's where they've been setting us up, and that's where we're at right now, set up for that mass hypnosis movement now.
Yeah, I tell you. But I had another question for you.
Okay, we'll have to keep this one short because we've got a couple of people. We got Brent in again, but go ahead. We'll take the last question.
Okay. I remember a segment where you a call where you were talking about going into different stores where you didn't want to wear a mask, and they were compelling you to wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you would be able to sue the stores.
Yes, I'm going to go through a lawsuit now with something that just happened to me recently. But go ahead.
Okay, now this tyrant mayor that just left in New York City, de Blasio, he was mandating, and he was really coming down on businesses. A lot of businesses closed because of this. He was trying to push this mandate. We're getting vaccine, and showing people, you know, having people show their cards when they sat, you know, went into a restaurant. So I heard, and also people that were working in city agencies and even in unions, they were pushing for this, you know, everyone getting vaccinated, stuff like that. Now, can we, or the people, since the mayor was using that fear, and the governor of the state was using that fear on people, you know, because of losing their jobs, who would they sue? Can they sue the city, sue the governor? How does that work?
Well, you could sue them. You see, here's one of the key things. You see, once they step outside of their authority,
I guess what I'm asking you is, what is the most effective way to put the brakes on something like this? Because it's a mandate. There was no legislation. It's not a war.
The problem is the fix is in. Remember, we're at war, okay? And we are the casualties of war. Many of us, whatever injuries we're receiving, it's a casualty of war. That's what's going on right now. And yeah, we can sue them, and we can. And there's a way to go about doing it and the right way, and to pull it through. But the problem is that the status quo is going to be maintained by the judges, and that's they're all crooked, they're all evil. If you do it when we get to the other side, you have of course, then you can get through to a court of justice, and you can get justice, and you can sue these people. Remember, when I sued agents from the IRS and from other various places, and I sued also the commissioner of the IRS commissioner, and I made my point very clear. They don't have any protection. We don't belong in a federal court. They came into my county. They committed a crime. They stepped outside of their power and authority and jurisdiction. They have no protection at all. They're a person in my county who has committed a crime, and we need to go to court right here. And I was suing them in New York State Court in my county, and it's the New York State Supreme Court. And of course, the attorneys, the U.S. attorneys came in, and they drugged the case out and brought it into the federal court. And then I'm fighting with the judge, and the judge is just pure evil. I mean, some of the things, I demanded numerous times, what jurisdiction am I in? I don't know how to defend myself if I don't know the jurisdiction. Tell me the jurisdiction. She refused. She said, I'm not telling you. She literally said that. She refused the jurisdiction to give me the jurisdiction on at least three, maybe four occasions in a couple of times I was in the court. And I also informed her that the jurisdiction needs to be put up on top of that paper. I need to know the jurisdiction. So that was one problem with her. They don't care. They're just evil. They think that they are so protected, and they also think that we're morons, that we don't know what the next step to do. Okay.
Right. Now, exactly.
I have a plan going in on that court again. Matter of fact, I think I'll be working on the paperwork in the next couple of weeks, and to get back in there to deal with the problems. Both U.S. attorneys, no, well, there was one U.S. attorney who was representing all of them, they defaulted and admitted the default in court. And the rules say that the only way you can get back in is, A, you have to have a heck of a good reason, okay, which he didn't, and he confessed it in court and said he went on vacation, the moron. I mean, what a jerk. Can you imagine? Who'd want that guy for a lawyer, right? He went on vacation, and I don't know what else he said. It was just whatever. I didn't even understand half of what she said. And she ripped into him to make it look good. Oh, you should know better. There are other people in your office, and you could have had another attorney take over the case, and so on and so forth. And he just remained quiet, had nothing to say. But she let him back in anyway. Now, in order for that guy to get back into court, okay, number one, he has to have a damn good excuse on why he didn't fill the papers out in time. And number two, he has to show proof that he has a chance of winning the case, okay? Of course, he couldn't do either, and she let him back in. Now, there was a private corporation that I sued at the same time because The IRS has this new game going on with the people that really, that they can't really get through to, you know, because there's certain things they don't want to surface in a courtroom. And I've already signaled to them those things. So someone like me, they kind of know, well, we'll get to you another way. And they hire, here you got, you know, the IRS is a collection agency who went out and hired another collection agency, which is a private corporation, to come out to try to destroy my credit and come out after me that way. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So I sued them, okay, brought them into court too, right? I brought all of the agents into court. And they totally defaulted. They just blew it off 3-4 months later, you know, and all of a sudden they show up in court after 3 or 4 months. I mean, it took a long time to get into court to begin with, this COVID thing and all that stuff. And we already had 2 hearings. I already defaulted them. And now they show up, and she lets them back in, okay? A, they haven't got a snowball's chance of winning the case. They can't prove that, okay? And they never even offered a reason to the judge on why she didn't come.
So it's against the process.
It's the status quo. You're up against the status quo that they're going to maintain. Yes. So, you see, I do the cases anyway. I don't care because, to me, it's nails in the coffin. You know, every case we do, we have hundreds of cases, literally, okay, that we've applied to the court system, hundreds of papers and hundreds of cases. And that's okay that they've ignored us. All we're doing is proving a pattern. Not only just one judge, but many judges. They're all doing the same thing. There's conspiracy. There's collaboration. That proves it right there, the fact that they do it all identical. And they do the same thing with the same, they make the same claims.
Right.
So that's okay to me because when we get to the other side, there's
now
payment.
You can get the transcripts and everything else and all the whatever the court stenographer typed up and everything, word for word, everything that and all the process and everything, right?
Yeah, well, what's very interesting about that is they changed.
Will they release that to you?
Well, I haven't requested it yet. I should have. I'm going to. But first I'm going to write my paper, file it in, then I'm going to request all the transcripts. But, you know, I got it all recorded, so it doesn't matter. It's not against the they make it against the law to record what's in the court, but it never should be against the law that's recorded in court. Maybe you should notify them, but they can't resist you from recording it. You know, it's just open to the public anyway. There are certain things where they don't want a video camera or maybe a recording in there, maybe with a situation, maybe child abuse or something like that. There are certain cases,
right.
Rape. You know, you don't want that to be exposed outside. But anything that's not sensitive like that should be okay. But, yeah, look, at these people are criminals. They're breaking the law. I knew they were going to break the law. I do have a recording. I won't expound that out, but what I will do is write my affidavit, and let's see what they do about trying to rebut my affidavit. Let's see what they say about that, because I know word for word it took place in that court. And when I get the transcripts, if these things are missing, again,
right.
I get the case.
Right. But the only thing is, in the case that you were talking about with, like, child abuse, something like that, you know, maybe the court can deem your case as too sensitive. You know what I mean?
No. My case is not too sensitive. My case is revealing criminality and the criminals, and I'm going to, you know, if it's going to be exposed, it's going to be exposed. Look, the judge is stopping it because you're taking it from the position they may try to make the claim that it's too sensitive.
Right.
No, I don't think that could float, not in a court of justice. You get the people. Remember, the court of law is run by the people, not the judge. Hang on a minute. What do you want? Yeah, I'm going to. You want to let her out? Let her out and bring her in. She'll run on her own. Where was I? These people they got the whole thing fixed. You can't get past them. But again, you know, if you prove the pattern, and believe me, we've got plenty of evidence to prove the pattern, Okay. They're all guilty. When you send a habeas corpus to a judge, and the judge even has it removed from the clerk, the records, okay, that's a crime, okay? A habeas corpus cannot be denied. That is their duty on a federal level particularly, their duty, their purpose is to champion the Constitution. That's their duty. That's their purpose. They can run in through an equity court and champion the Constitution. We don't have to go into a court of law. This is what they should be doing, but they're not. They're championing the status quo.
Maybe you can get that type of thing and go on, let's say, Sean Hannity or Fox News or something like that.
No, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in getting into court and get justice. When we get to the other side, it'll have to be dealt with. All the homes that people have lost, they have to be returned. Or they have to be compensated. You know, all the habeas corpuses that they've denied and these people spent in jail, there's hell to pay for that, okay? These people deserve a hell of a lot of money for every day they were in jail to begin with, number one. And that judge needs to be put in jail. I would say give him 5 days for every day that person spent in jail. That would be my suggestion to the jury.
In order to get that justice, maybe by exposing it and exposing them and what they have done as an illegal action, as someone who should know better as a judge in the court system, I think that maybe that would give you more justice, because more people would know about it, more people would get involved and follow the case.
I think a lot of people will know about it. First of all, again, let's think about what we're talking about, getting to the other side. You're not going to get justice on this side. Only when the law is applied and these people are put in jail and arrested and many of them hung and all of that has taken place, only then is the justice going to rise up and be able to be dealt with. Okay, number one. So these cases will become opened up. But bear in mind, look at National Liberty Alliance. We've got almost 10,000 members, or just about 10,000 members. We're building committees of safety. We're creating a relationship with everyone on the grassroots level. So we can pass this information through that, and it goes out like wildfire, because it's powerful fodder. It's things that the committees of safety can even use for leveraging. Okay.
But what I'm saying is, the more the merrier. You know, if you can expose it on a grand scale, where you're getting in front of millions of people, because there are a lot of people that are frustrated.
But I wouldn't do that right now. I wouldn't do that right now. It's not the proper environment to do it in. You know, the other side is the proper environment, at least for me, because, you know, I'm somewhat of a target.
But what on the you're talking about the other side, as far as like maybe the military getting involved?
That's the only way this nation can be saved.
Wow.
There is no other way.
Devolution.
Are you familiar with devolution? Devolution. Are you familiar with that?
Not really.
Okay. What you need to go do is go out to her website. Okay. Let me go back and see. The wrong way. Let's try the other way. Get out to her website right here, Amazing Polly, okay? Just click on that link and look, scroll through her videos, okay? You got to look at a lot of videos. This is a real good one. Everything old is Q again. Really a great video, okay? But she gets into discussing devolution and lays things out. And so does this other guy, Christian Patriot News, okay? He also gets very deeply into devolution. He lays it out, the facts. There's no doubt about devolution is in play. Again, people who are not paying attention and not looking at the facts and the documents that are involved on what's really going on behind the scenes, if they're not privy to seeing that and hearing about that and seeing the evidence, then, of course, they don't know whether it's true or not. So we have to become informed. But in here, if you scroll through, you'll find something on devolution. It's not too far back. You'll find he worked out on devolution and laid it out. But so did Amazing Polly.
Amazing Polly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now again, you can find their information on our website, okay? Let's see if we get here. Right here. This is up-to-date news, so it's under today's issues right there. Up-to-date news. Right under today's, and I'm going to put some other news medias that we've been listening to up here also. But I think the most important ones are these three, because these three give good reports often. The X report gives 12 reports a week, so that's a lot to listen to and look through. You know, he gives two reports a day. Christian Patriot News, he probably does about 4 a week, maybe more, sometimes less. Amazing Polly is the same thing. She'll maybe give 3 or 4 a week, sometimes more. But she does heavy, heavy, heavy research. When she finishes her conclusions, you know you got it. You know.
With that,
I got to move on because we got other people and we got Brent here. So.
Okay, I just want to leave you with this. It's amazing you're saying that because it's all connecting in my mind right now because I've been listening to reports on some of the leftist news. And they were worried about some type of coup going on in 2024.
Yeah.
So they know something's coming.
Oh, they do know something's up. Yep, absolutely. They're worried about Trump. They know Trump's got something up his sleeve. Look, they know he's still in power. Okay? People don't realize there are two presidents right now. Okay? We can argue that point, and I don't think it's worth arguing. Let's wait and we'll find out sooner or later. But the bottom line is there are two presidents right now. This isn't the first time in history there was two presidents. Remember, he already declared war. He said that was an act of war what China did. And China's connected with Biden and of course all of them, you know, all of them are connected.
I believe that.
Okay? And he says this is an act of war. Okay, devolution has gone in play. That went in play, I believe, in 2017, not long after he got into office. Devolution went into play. The planning board went into play. And the whole plan was to allow them to do what they want to do. Go ahead, steal the election. You know. And what does Trump say? We got it all. You know, we got it all.
And on top of that, there are a lot of corporatists out there, a lot of corporate people that are heavily invested into China. Now, and that's the reason why they came against Trump, too. Now they have this Evergrande that just defaulted, and now China is in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. They have a couple of trillion in debt, and a lot of the investors are losing confidence in China because of the CCP and all this other stuff. And, you know, they're really getting out there, and they're trying to take over the world. You know, they have a plan to take over the world. So,
well, absolutely. The New World Order, that plan's been going on since 1750, actually. And, you know, to try to take over the colonies and the world, ultimately. And there's a covenant between the Pope and the King back then, a little later on. It was back in it was 1818 is when the covenant was made between the Pope and the King. But they had a game going on before that, working together. You know, and but in 1818 is goodness, I forget what it was called.
That's right after the 1812.
It's in my writings and all the paperwork we have, huh?
That was right after the War of 1812.
That's correct. Yes, you know, and they put out letters of marque to plunder America's judicial and political system, and they've been working at it ever since. We've been in a war. The Revolutionary War never ended. It continues. They did not let it go. It is covert. That's why. Only now has it become overt. Okay, so now the people are starting to see, and it's going to be more and more exposed as we get there. And the whole thing about the ABA, the American Bar Association, no, the Revolutionary War. The ABA.
No, I'm talking about. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The American, the ABA, the American Bar Association, are the minions of the New World Order. They are so guilty to look to see the work that they had done with the legislators and all of the legislation going back to the Organic Act and even before that, but the Organic Act of 1871, I believe it was, and then they got the Rules Enabling Act in place. Who do you think wrote all that stuff? It was lawyers. Bar lawyers put that together. When you look back to see all of the legislation, and we do a paper on that that lays out the legislation, you know, year after year after year and year, bringing all this stuff together. When you look at it, it's cohesive. It's constructive. You know, law is constructive. Okay, and it's constructive. It's a construction of a prison. It's a statutory prison of the people. And then the whole process is to take America down and destroy us from within. And then they've been working on that literally, before we even became a nation. In 1750, in response particularly, I think, to Benjamin Franklin, Okay, because he had that newspaper going, and he did a lot of good things and talked about a lot of science and stuff, but he also talked about a lot of things about the king, you know, and they weren't happy. And so what they did, you know, they couldn't get convictions here in the colonies at the time because, you know, we had common law, and they'd have to be brought up before the common law, and the juries refused to indict the grand juries. So they couldn't do anything, and that's why they, you know, would black bag, what do they call them, bag the people over the head and then take them on a boat and take them over to Britain to try them. But anyway, in 1750, the king already set forth the process of and created the Bar Association on American soil. And they've been operating ever since. And in 1878 or somewhere around there is when the American Bar Association took the control. You know, it was passed from the bar. They changed it over to the American Bar Association. But, you know, it's all civil law. It's Roman law that they teach. It has nothing to do. I mean, of course, they teach equity, but they've combined everything, and they call it civil law. You know?
So LaRouche was right. They believe that the British Empire is still in control.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow, that is amazing.
Through the Bar Association, and it's more than, of course, look at it, it's the elite in the British Empire, so to speak, and also, you know, you have Washington, D.C., the military industrial complex. You got the Pope, which is the religious side of things. Look at it's a three-way thing, you know, the money and over in England, and you got the military industrial complex. Yeah, you got the whole thing. It's three stars on a flag, and that exists and flies in Washington, D.C., and also in Rome, and also in England, in Britain, London, matter of fact. But I gotta move on because we got two more people in the queue, and I don't want to miss them. So, all right.
Thank you for your time, John. It was very
interesting. All right, and give me a call when you set something up. I'll come down and talk if you want.
Not a problem. Yeah, we have to get that together. Anyway, have a good night.
You too.
Get you up the call.
All right. Terry, you said Brent was here. Is Brent here? Brent?
Yes, he was.
Is he still here?
I'm looking. Yeah, he's unmuted.
Yeah, I'm here, John.
Okay, there you go. All right, I'm going to pass the mic over to you for a while. Try to give me 10 or 15 minutes, 10 minutes maybe, or whatever you can on the end, because we have two people in the queue. They've been there a long time, Jim from PA and Roger, and I'd like to try to take their calls, but I want to pass things to you first, and then you can pass it back when you're done, all right? Okay, so this is Brent Allen Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic.
Thank you, John. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own. They're my comments, and I'd agree with anybody else here on NLA, but they're nice enough to let me say a few words. Well, let's get to it. I want to talk about the jury. We're getting ready to do a class. We did a class on the sheriff, Darley from Berry County, Michigan, and he's agreed to accompany me on a class concerning the grand jury. I like to have him there. That we were going to start on the 6th of this month, but I don't believe that's going to happen now. But we'll start for long, the grand jury. But of course, the grand jury is a creature that's closely related to the jury in some ways, but so much different in other ways. You know, the job of the juror, whether he's a grand juror or a trial juror, is to say yes to the government or to say no. That's it. Either say yes, the grand juror says yes, Mr. Government, you may take this man to trial and try to get his life, liberty, property, or a combination thereof. Or no, you may not. That's it. And the grand jury, there are no rules of evidence that apply. They can look at anything they want, consider anything they want, relevant or non-relevant. They can demand anything they want. They can investigate anybody they want to investigate, including the judge on the case or the prosecutor. they have that tremendous power, but they do not have the power. Grand jury does not have the power to say, yes, you may take this man's life, liberty, or property, or a combination thereof. He does have the right to say, or the power to say, the authority to say, you can take this man to trial on this case, whatever they say. That's power. Usually 23 members to a grand jury. Doesn't take majority to indict. It takes just takes 12, like a trial jury. Of course, the difference being trial jury only has 12 members at common law, and a grand jury traditionally has 23. Can't have more, can't have less. Some have 15. Still takes 12 to indict. If they're following the law, some have 23, still takes 12 to indict. Some have 48, the largest jury in the common law world, and juries only exist in the common law world, I believe is the 48-member jury of the, it's not the Tin Binders District of Cornwall, but it's one of those. No, it's a forest. It's the Forest of Dean. The Forest of Dean has its own jurisdiction, its own grand jury, 48 members. Ancient grand jury. Well, the purpose of the jury doesn't have a purpose, it has an objective. That's really what it is. You know, when the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, that's NASA for short, said they put a man on the moon, after that, they didn't have a clearly defined objective. And once they didn't have a clearly defined objective, the organization fell apart. Its rockets tumbled from the sky. And the decline was so sudden, so dramatic, that people believed the Soviets had sabotaged the thing. But that wasn't it. It was just the natural course of not having an objective. Things fall apart if you don't have an objective. Armed forces in Vietnam were in the same terrible, deplorable situation. They had no clear objective but to take dirt, to conquer land. The only objective they had and the only advancement that was possible was KIAs. If you get more killed in action, start body counting people, then you get promoted. That never wins wars, never. Did you know that, just as a side note, that the German army killed far and away more Americans than we killed of them, but we still won? Killing people doesn't win wars. Now, what wins wars is taking dirt, taking ground. Everything in God's economy is about the land. If you take the land, you win. You don't take the land, you lose. If you're out to kill the enemy, like we've been trying to do the last 20 years over there in sand land, the Near East, all we do is get a lot of people killed, we get killed, and then we're all done. We don't even know what we've done. We don't have an objective, see? Well, it's important. Everything rises and falls on an objective. Well, that's what a jury has. And you can't expect a juror to do his job when nobody's really told him what his job is. Not at all. Well, back in 1968, a case came before the Supreme Court of the United States, wound its way up, had started in Louisiana. A man convicted of murder in Louisiana, and they, I don't know whether they're going to send him to the electric chair, hang him, or send him to prison for life. I don't remember. It doesn't make any difference. It's not relevant necessarily to the case. But he screamed and hollered when it was over and said, I didn't get a jury trial. I asked for a jury trial. You didn't give me one. I just had a bench trial, and you sent me to Angola State Prison for the rest of my life. Supreme Court of the United States came back and said, that's right. You got to give people a jury trial in Louisiana. Louisiana had never had jury trials before 1968. Why didn't they have jury trials in Louisiana? Well, the reason they didn't have jury trials is because Louisiana isn't the common law jurisdiction. It's a law of the city jurisdiction. I talked to a lawyer recently from Michigan. He went to law school in Louisiana. He's from Louisiana. He's a Cajun. He's a Cajun that went to law school and became a lawyer. He told me law school in Louisiana, first year, you take a course called comparative law. That's comparing and contrasting the law of the land with the law of the city, our common law with the civil law. because they're a civil law code jurisdiction in Louisiana, and they're proud of it. But there's no freedom under such kind of a code, and all the world's under that code, the same code that Louisiana's under. Louisiana's under a French form of the code. It's the same law that the Roman Church and the Orthodox Church has, the Code of Justinian, put to an ecclesiastic purpose. All the communist countries have always been under that code. Well, anyway, he said, I'm entitled to a jury trial under the Constitution of the United States. And they said, this isn't a federal court. This is a state court of Louisiana, and we don't have jury trials down here because we're law of the city, civil law, Roman civil law jurisdiction. Well, went to the Supreme Court, and Justice Byron White said this. He said, that was Duncan versus Louisiana, by the way, Duncan versus Louisiana, famous case, 391 U.S. 145. I'm quoting from page 156, 1968. Judge Byron White wrote the majority opinion. He said, those who wrote our constitutions knew from history and experience that it was necessary to protect against unfounded criminal charges brought to eliminate enemies and against judges too responsive to the voice of higher authority. Now, this is a man that was in the legal system, and he says judges are too responsive to the voice of higher authority. What? Are you telling me, Mr. Justice Byron White of the U.S. Supreme Court, are you telling me that judges do what they're told and don't really have independent judgment? That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. Is it true? You better believe it's true. I've been to court and watched it. Judges are under all sorts of pressure, all sorts of insecurities, wound up and bound up in their own whims and difficulties, worse than you and me. Their lives are in the toilet often. They're without confidence, don't know who they are. Or they're just out of place, like a lot of these female judges. What happens? Well, they become too responsive to the voice of higher authority, the voice of other judges, the voice of the president, the governor, the voice of their colleagues in the Democratic Party or even the Republican Party. That's why we have juries. You want to put your life in the hands of a political hack that got elected to the bench? No, he's not the final decider of right and wrong, or him or it or whatever is there in individual instances from whose decision there is no appeal. No, we have the jury down here on land, within this realm down here, is the final decider of right and wrong in individual instances from whose decision there is no appeal. The purpose of a jury, Justice White went on to say, in another case in 1975, 7 years later, the purpose of a jury is to guard against exercise of arbitrary power. Exercise of arbitrary power? Can't judges defend us against the exercise of arbitrary power? Answer, no. Not only, well, they proved it. They can't. They won't. He says to make available the common sense judgment of the community as a hedge against the overzealous or mistaken prosecutor and in preference to the professional or perhaps overconditioned or biased response of a judge. Professional or perhaps overconditioned. Biased response of a judge. As Chesterton says, they just get too hard and used to it. That was Taylor versus Louisiana. We're back to Louisiana again. 1975, 402, U.S. 522, 530. Despite the clear language of the Supreme Court and the lessons of history, there are judges who will instruct the jurors that they must take the law as the court gives it to them, whether they like it or not. That is absolutely untrue. That's what they say. They even say if you're going to be on this jury, you got to swear that you'll obey the instructions of the judge. Anything to take away the independent judgment of the juror, to put the juror under the voice of higher, supposed higher authority. What do we need a juror for if he's going to do what the judge tells him? Just have the judge. Well, can juries be trusted? Well, no man's to be trusted. No. But that's the way God said to do it. Juries are the way God said to do it. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 6. You can read it there and in other places in principle. Well, jurors are to be independent of mind. They can bring anything into the jury box they want to bring in their minds, in their conscience. Matter of fact, they're not going to be able to help. They'll have to. Oh, by the way, I'm trying to watch the clock here. I'll tell you what I'll do. It's time I quit. I'll give him 15 minutes. He asked for 10. I think we should give him 15 since I'm just visiting here and I'm a guest. So, John, I'm going to cut it off and turn it back over to you to finish up the tasks that you had in mind.
Okay. Thank you very much, Brent. I appreciate that. Yeah, we have two people in the queue, and I wanted to try to get to them. They've been in there a long time. So, okay. Hey, just a real quick thing before I go to those two people, and we'll try to keep this really short. I was looking into federal prisons, and I was, I think the first federal prison was in 18... Goodness, I think it was late 1800s, not too late, maybe 70s or something like that. The first federal prison. And I was looking for the authority for the federal government to have a prison. And I know that they have the ability to write law in the sense of what do they call it when they make money, fake money? What's that called?
Make money? Meaning the prisoners?
No. People they make money and they print money and they try to spend it. Counterfeiting. That's the word I was looking for. I couldn't think of that. But counterfeiting. I know that they have the ability to make law concerning counterfeiting. And there was one other thing. But I didn't see any place where they had the power or the authority to make a prison. I would imagine that the right way...
No, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Yeah. And,
yeah. As a matter of fact, there were no federal prisons. I don't even think there was one as soon as what you said. But if you went to federal prison, you went to a Navy brig or an Army barracks. In other words, you went to a military prison. And there weren't hardly any criminal laws at all, because the Constitution only mentions four kinds of crimes. Now we have almost 6,000 federal statutes for crimes the Constitution never mentions. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
And now, of course, there are federal prisons, and there's a corporation for profit called Federal Prison Industries, Inc. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the first real visible federal prison was Alcatraz. And they couldn't even fill Alcatraz with prisoners because there weren't enough federal laws even back then in the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a new thing, all this federal baloney. Yeah,
because look, if the law is broken, it needs to be dealt with within the county, and I would think the sheriff should be involved, and it should be on the state level, not on a federal level. I was looking at statistics, and I want to try to keep this short. We need to talk about this some more maybe, but I was looking at statistics, and the statistics, first of all, we have 5% of the population of the world, and yet we have 25% of the people in prison, compared to other countries. We have 25% of the people in prison. I forget how to really make that point. I think it's 25% more than other countries. But I'll have to relook that to see what that statistic was. But here was the thing. When I was looking at the different charges against people, 70% of the people that are in federal prison is on gun charges and drug charges. Now, on the drug charges, of the 70%, 49% was drugs, and the other 21% or whatever is left over was on gun charges. And I got to believe, the minimum time in prison for anybody that's arrested for using drugs for first offense is 2 to 5. And then after that, you come back a second time, it's even worse. Some countries don't even put people in prison, of course, for drugs. look, we shouldn't be putting people in prison for using the drugs. If there's illegal commercial activity, then maybe you can go after them for that. But that's about it. But not the people who are using the drugs, the people who maybe are selling the drugs. And it should be controlled anyway. Drugs should be legal, but controlled and sold to people over a certain age. However, that would well work out. I'm sure we can work something out. But anyway, we got so many people in prison. It's just unbelievable. You know, in federal prison. And that doesn't even count state prisons or county prisons. But good. Did you want to say something?
That's right. No, I better let you get on with these others.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you more about this. I'm doing a little research on it, and maybe we'll talk some more about it, okay? Okay, let's go to the callers here. Thank you, Brent. Let's go to our callers. Jim from PA will take you next, and there is one other person after that, Roger. Jim, you got the mic.
Oh,
sorry to make you wait so long.
No problem. With Brent on the line, I have a question. I have questions and comments, but let me ask the question. If I had not heard, if Brent did not talk about the Salem witch trials last week, where did I hear about it at? I heard about that story about the Salem witch trials. If it wasn't him, where did I hear about that at? He said he didn't. It was the first time he told that story.
So do you think Brent? Brent
first time I finished it.
Finished it. Okay. All right. But John, let me ask. I'll be very brief about this. Comments. I had asked you to be a speaker here in Pittsburgh with the John Burke Society. We were going to have a speaker. I have not been able to communicate with them over the holidays. I'm very disappointed with that organization, but I've tried every way I could to talk to people. So I just want to withdraw that invitation.
Yeah, if you can make the connection, you make the connection. If I tried to talk with those people before. I tried to talk to them about the committee men, and they said they don't get political. And I said, this has nothing to do with really political. I said, I understand that committee men are political and they're lost in all the politicking and stuff, but this is the process to how we put people onto the ballots, okay? And we need to take this back. The people, and this is before I understood that this whole process of election is just garbage. It's just a way of controlling the people and seizing the power away from the people. But they wouldn't entertain that kind of thinking, okay? My focus, of course, would be, of course, on the committees of safety if I did talk with them. That would be a little bit of the part of the process, but I wouldn't get too deep into that conversation with them because they don't want to hear it. But eventually, when they study and look at things and start to see what we're doing and where the powers are and the authorities, if there's political and judicial power, if you have judicial and you have political power, if the people control the judiciary, meaning the courts of law through juries, untainted and well-informed jurors, fully informed jurors, and we control the political process in the sense of not politicking, but putting statesmen into power and holding them to the fire that they don't break their oaths and they don't commit all these criminal activities, because we're going to either indict them or pull them out through a recall if they do. And if we control those two points of power and are active in our communities controlling our local governments, we got government by consent. That's it. We got it. And that's what it takes to have it. And if you deny any part of that process, or you deny the whole process altogether, then you can't have liberty. You can't have government by consent, because there is no other way. There is no other way. I challenge anybody to show me another way. There is no other way. So, but yeah, I appreciate it. If that changes, let me know. Though I'm willing to go.
Okay, I will do. The other comment, Allegheny County Committee of Safety will be meeting tomorrow, and we plan on calling in. Don't you have a conference call Tuesday night?
Tomorrow I got a call. We'll be on for an hour from 7:15 Eastern Time, which is your time also, so 7:15 to 8:15. And, you know, we'll go a little longer if we have to, but I'm trying not to. And you know, if we want more time, you know, we can come on a Monday night program and let me know. We'll take you first and foremost and focus in on committees of safety, because this is what we're all about. This is what we need to do. This is what we're trying to build and encourage the people on the grassroots level to take control of the government through the only process that I know, the committees of safety.
Okay, well, we'll give you a call tomorrow. We don't have anything specific right at this time. We will talk to you tomorrow evening.
All right, sounds good.
Now my question.
Yeah, anybody else that wants to come into the room tomorrow night, you're welcome, but the only conversation is Committees of Safety questions. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay, the book, The Making of America, by Cleon Skousen from National Center for Constitution Studies. Now, is that particular book, is that noted at the NLA website that you can purchase?
We don't sell any of those books, but we do reference, I believe, somewhere on our website, I'm sure. If we don't, we definitely will put up a post somewhere. I'll have to look. I know we're looking through the whole website right now for things that have disappeared or things that we are missing or things that we should have up there, and I'll make a note of that constitutional study something or other for the those books. They got the real Thomas Jefferson, the real Benjamin Franklin, the real George Washington, The Making of America, The 5,000-Year Leap, and it goes on and on and on. Great books, and I want to approach those people. I'm not going to do it now, but soon, hopefully. I want to approach those people to see if they'll work with us to change those books that they have into textbooks, because those books can easily be changed into textbooks. And this is what our children should be learning. They should spend an entire semester, or whatever you want to call it in the lower schools, they should spend the entire term on a founding father. You know, they should focus in one term on Thomas Jefferson, focus a term on George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, Madison, Lincoln, and really get to know who our founding fathers were, what their thinking was, what their thoughts was, what their conversation was. You know, this is so important that we teach our children these things, that they grow up with this kind of these kind of mentors. And The Making of America, what a book. I mean, that, again, should be a school year for our children. 5,000-Year Leap should be a school year for our children, you know?
Okay, powerful. John, you said turned it into a school
textbook.
Textbook. Yeah. I thought it was already in that format.
No, they're not. Not set up for the schools or anything. No, I didn't see it as being that. They didn't have questions at the end of the chapters, did they? I know definitely on the other books they didn't. On The Making of America, I don't recall seeing any kind of questions. All we need to do is at the end of every chapter is put questions and just make it a textbook.
I see.
And if we, we disagree with them, look, if they can sell it, we'll just help to do it, or they can do it. You know, we should encourage them to do it, or we'll assist them to do it. We don't need to make money on it. We just need to get good books into the school. And if we can accomplish that goal, these books are just fantastic.
Yeah, and like I said, just wanted to know if it was posted anywhere. If anybody went to the website, could see that book is available through National Center for Constitutional Studies. That's all.
We had a page for books. Looking to see where that might be. That might be under education, not courses, American history, educational videos, law. Topical, no. You know, that's one of the pages I think disappeared. We need to put back up, which is reading material. People can go, and we reference different places, like particularly that place. They just have so many great books. Something for Constitutional Studies. I'm trying to think of the name, the full name, CCNS.
I think National Center for Constitutional Studies.
Oh, it's N-N-N. Yeah, okay.
Hey, NCSS. Listen, I'm going to close, but I just want to give you one trivia. There was an article in one of the local county papers, and it was a rare copy of one of the original constitutions. It sold for $43.2 million a couple months ago.
Wow.
At an auction. $43.2 million for an original copy. I think they said there's only 13 known copies of that original constitution.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. $43.2 million for a copy of that original one. So,
well, it's actually priceless.
yeah, you think. But yeah. Anyways, I'm going to close. I'll talk to you again, and I'll let you know if we can get you on speaking for the JBS.
Yeah, okay. And, okay. You know, even if... you know, if you're putting things together and you wanted me to come out to speak, I'll come out to speak. You know, you're probably about a 4 or 5 hour trip from me, I think, but we'll do it.
That'd be great, John. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Sure. All right, we'll take our last caller, Roger. You got the mic. Go right ahead, Roger. Sorry to make you wait so long.
Okay, well, I think this is an important question a previous caller asked, and it is this. How do we get rid of these tyrants? How do we get rid of these traitors that are in our government? And I'm not talking about on some distant other side. I mean, now, and it looks to me like from what I've been reading on your pages and Sheriff Mack's pages, that sheriffs, county sheriffs, would have the authority to arrest these bums for treason. Why isn't it happening? Why can't they just be hauled in and held on trial against their oaths of office and the Constitution?
Well, you know, that is a possibility with the sheriffs if you can get enough sheriffs together. And you would need a lot of sheriffs to do this, okay? To get a posse together, a posse of sheriffs, and head out to Washington and start there. But they also have to deal with their own states and their own capital. But there is already a plan out there called devolution. Are you familiar with devolution?
I just heard about it on this phone call today.
Devolution is a plan that military and Trump put together, and he executed while he was in office. It's nothing that's really, you can really kind of find a lot of this stuff. But this information came out through Q. And so people may say, well, if they, people who haven't followed Q and doesn't understand how Q put his whole process together, and Q is a group of people, it's not one person, but how they really laid out the news for the future. The future proves past. That's the key to this whole thing. They've laid everything out that's going on today. It's like reading, it's almost like reading a prophetic book, you know, what's taking place today, because the whole thing was planned out. And there's only one way to save this nation, and that's the military. There is no other way. I thought about this, and I don't like that idea of having to use the military to do it, but it is true. There is no other way. As long as the military...
Like one at a time when they come home.
Well,
if
you're going
to
see mass arrests.
Constitutional authorities. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're going to see mass arrests. You're going to see a lot of hangings. I do believe that. The penalty for treason could be hanging, not all the time, because treason has degrees, by the way. For the big guys that really pull this whole thing together, death by hanging is the penalty. I don't think they're going to let them off easy with a shot in the arm. I think they're going to...
Sedition, treason,
I mean, that's what they did to Hussein, remember? When they hung him, and they even broadcast him. So, devolution is in play. I got to believe before this new year is out, that we just came in, it's going to be executed and completed. I think sooner than later, at least I hope it's sooner than later. I'm tired of waiting myself. I want to get this over with. But look at the people.
I hate
sitting by
while they keep destroying the country.
We'll fix it quick. Remember, we're taking everything away from them that they've got. You don't let the criminal, you know, keep the prize. You take it back and you return it to its proper owner. And the proper owner is we the people. We're the ones that have been robbed. We're the ones that are casualties of war.
Vitiation.
Yeah. We need to be restored.
Fraud vitiates everything. Mm-hmm.
For every injury, there must be a remedy, and that this is the biggest case of all. Now, I don't think we can wait too much longer. When you see what's going on, if you followed the cue, and I don't have all the red lines, and I'm still listening and learning myself, but there are red lines that cross. And as they cross certain red lines, something happens. And there are certain red lines that they cannot cross. You know, something crazy like, trying to blow something up with an atomic bomb or something. I mean, they got the capabilities of that. That's a line that they will not be permitted to cross. Mm-hmm. But there are certain lines that as they cross, you move into the next step. Right now, a lot of information is pouring out. If you're following the news, and again, if you look at the desktop I'm sharing right now, these three places particularly, X22, Christian Patriot, and Amazing Polly. If you go back and just go back a little bit and
even
start listening.
Even just Real America's Voice and Frank's Speech. Yeah.
But these three, I'm not too familiar. I've heard that stuff, but I'm not too familiar with following along with that, but I am with these people. And the thing is that they have laid out a lot of information sort of on that's behind the scenes sort of kind of stuff, and a lot of Q stuff, and that's where devolution is explained. You can go into Amazing Polly, and if you go back through her, you know, maybe a couple of weeks or a couple of months, actually probably a couple
I'll
of months,
do that.
You'll find devolution in there. Same thing with X-22 and same thing with Christian Patriot. They all did programs on that. And when you put it all together and the evidence that they laid out to support that this is a factual situation, then you got a lot of faith in what's going on. So it's a matter of time. One of the key things, some people, they think the statement is out there, there's going to be like 10% of the people that you'll never convince, okay, what's really going on. You know, those are just the morons, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, you have to have a large percentage of the people, and I believe we're well over 50% at this point, that sees what's going on. I talk to people that really don't follow news or anything, and they just live on this social media stuff. But I'm seeing it poured out through social media. What I'm hearing from them, they all see the problems and that the government is, everything's fake news and the government has gone rogue. And I mean, I see it all over the place from talking to, not that I go out to those medias because I don't, but from people who go out to medias and talk to me about it because I'm interested in what they're hearing and what they're thinking just to see what the common person is thinking. And it's all over the place that there's something wrong with this country. So when the move comes, it's going to be welcomed.
Good. Amen. So,
but I do see it coming soon.
All right.
All right. Anything else?
I guess that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Roger. Appreciate the call. Okay, it is 5 minutes after midnight. Thank you. It's 5 minutes after midnight, so it's time to say goodnight. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And anybody wants to come to the meeting tomorrow evening at 7:15 Eastern Standard Time for 1 hour, only to discuss and answer questions on the committees of safety. That's the only reason I'm having that 1 hour a week, Tuesdays, 7:15. Okay, good night.